United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Clients. Prosecutors say victims gave money to 52-year-old Robert McDermott to eventually pay for funeral arrangements, but the money disappeared. For WSOM News, I'm Harper Keegan.
The weather's getting warmer, and they're coming. It's flea season, and Harbor Pet Center is ready to help you keep the fleas off your pets. Right now, get 1 month of Canine Advantix 2 free with any purchase of $20 or more. That's a $22.99 value. So protect your pet now. Offer ends June 30th. Visit our website at harborpetcenter.com for even more money-saving coupons and specials. Harbor Pet Center, 7338 Market Street in Boardman, and at harborpetcenter.com.
Hi, I'm Barry Sanders. Scleroderma is a horrible disease that ravages the lives of its victims and their families. I know firsthand because it ended the life of my sister Nancy at the age of 26. I still think about her often, and I wish that more research were being done to end the suffering from this disease. Don't just stand on the sideline. Please get involved and help us to win the fight to cure scleroderma.
Walk to Cure Scleroderma, Saturday, June 14th in Boardman, Ohio. Visit boardmanwalk.info.
Are you trying to sell your old car? Instead, donate your vehicle to Heritage for the Blind. Pickup is free, and your donation is tax deductible. Call 800-942-0697. 800-942-0697.
This is an important announcement for anyone with a student loan who is having trouble making their monthly payments. Pay attention. There is a special toll-free hotline that has been set up especially for you. Grab a pen and take down this number or put it in your cell phone. But call 1-800-426-0551. That's 1-800-426-0551. When you call the Federal Student Loan Relief Hotline, you will get free information. Free information to help you relieve the overwhelming financial burden of an ongoing, endless student loan. If you're behind, late on payments, or even in default on your student loan, the Federal Student Loan Relief Hotline can help you. You may also be able to cut your payments in half right away. The Federal Student Loan Relief Hotline can also stop the harassing phone calls, wage garnishments, and even remove tax liens. But you have to call 1-800-426-0551. The Federal Student Loan Relief Partner Companies has helped thousands of people just like you fix their student loan problem. Call 1-800-426-0551 for free information today. That's 1-800-426-0551.
Here at Pet Spa Salon on Western Reserve Road, we offer many services to our customers' pets, including bathing, grooming, nail trimming, and we even brush, bathe, and trim cats. Pet Spa Salon uses only all natural products. With 35 years' experience in the business, our expert staff work slowly and gently to put even the most fidgety pets at ease. Come into Pet Spa Salon and get your fur baby looking and feeling great. Open Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. 1122 Western Reserve Road. Call for an appointment.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit AIWHealth.com.
Realtors have expertise in land development and management, retail, industrial, office, and investment properties. They have the experience, knowledge, and savvy to help you achieve your business and investment real estate goals. Realtors also have the power of the National Association of Realtors behind them, working with legislators and regulators to support the key role commercial real estate plays in our national economy. Ask for a professional who understands your commercial business. Ask for a Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
This time, it's personal. The local talk show that keeps you thinking about local, regional, national, and global issues. Let's get back to Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM.
With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Because I'm happy.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth.
Because I'm happy.
Happiness is to you.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do. Here come bad news talking this and that.
Yeah.
Well, give me all you got and don't hold it back.
Yeah.
Well, I should probably warn you I'll be just fine.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 38 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and as you know, it is Health and Wellness Day. It's the second Thursday of the month. Today is the 12th of June, 2014, and it's a little dreary outside of here in Northeast Ohio. I hope you're having a good day today. I've got a caller inside of the queue. I'll pull you up in just a moment. I've got Dr. Matt Mason here with me, as always. He and Dr. Brandy come in on the second Thursdays, and we talk about health and wellness. And today, I named the show Stop the Killings because I am finding out with myself as with everyone else, we are losing the game because we're killing ourselves based upon either ignorance, apathy, or just ignorance, whether it come with our eating, whether it come with our exercise, whether it's what type of health care we go after. We're very reactionary. We're not proactive. And as I say with my politics, we ought to be proactive in politics. We ought to be proactive with our health. Because if you take care of your health on the front end, it'll give you long life on your back end. But what's happening is an American, and as they say, the Western colonies, the Western world, we don't look at prevention. And we talked about chiropractic health in the first half hour, and I hodgepodged because I had some technical issues and I screwed up some stuff last night when I put the show in, so I'm sorry about that. But then I know that we're going to talk about genetically modified organisms. I did not even know what O stood for until last night, Doc. I really didn't. I thought it was, you know, GMO, genetically modified food. And so when I began to start doing some research on this a little bit more and understanding what GMO stood for, and it is almost in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it be your produce or whether it be your processed foods,
mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. And no one's really talking about it. And they're saying, oh, it's okay. And organic food is so overwhelmingly expensive. But we're eating things that are, it's like formaldehyde.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, two-thirds of the world is rejecting GMO foods. Even the Chinese army isn't allowing it.
Really?
Yeah.
So why are we?
Good question. Figure that out yourself.
I can't do that. I'm not smart as a fifth grader.
Can you say Oliver Stone?
I think Monsanto wants to own the genetics to nature. It's food. They want to control it.
How do you control something that you don't own?
By patenting the seeds, by genetically manipulating them and putting patents on them.
They say it's because it will help us have a stronger produce or stronger harvest. They say it's because it will give us an abundance for the world population. They say it will decrease and regulate the price of food. In America, though, we still pay our farmers, not the farm.
Right. Even if that's all the case, even if all what you said is true, at what cost? And the cost is of people's health, because it's destroying people's health, and there's evidence that shows that.
Well, how can you say that when people are living to ages that are far beyond our ancestors?
Look how sick they are. Look at people 50 years old. They're walking around. They're maimed.
They're not sick.
They look horrible. Yeah, they are.
No. They got a pill.
Well, they're sick. Go look at them. Do they look healthy to you? They're overweight. They're hobbling around. They're on 14 medications. When they end up in the hospital, they got a tube coming out of every orifice of their body. I don't call that healthy.
Speaking of which, I heard a study came out and said butter was good this morning. That we should eat more butter. Saturated fat is okay. And that we should actually erase all that we've heard because people are taking food out of their diet, and it's still not stopping diabetes, it's still not stopping hypertension, and it's still not stopping obesity.
Butter's completely fine for you, providing you're getting organic butter. You're getting healthy fats in there. There's nothing wrong with saturated fats. You have to have them in balance.
So when I say this, they're saying that no matter what we're doing, the rise in diabetes and hypertension is not decreased. If the numbers are not going anywhere. So is that because of GMO?
People are swallowing a philosophy. A wrong philosophy. I mean, they're believing in drugs and surgery to save them from all their ills. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen until people take responsibility for their own health, become educated in their health, and becoming proactive in their health. And that means eating healthy foods. That means receiving natural health care. You know, and we were telling our kids that to live a drug-free lifestyle, yet we're taking them to doctors that prescribe them drugs, and you go home and you look in their medicine cabinet, and they have drugs and have prescription drugs in the medicine cabinet at home. So when you look at that, there's a complete disconnect there. We have to change our philosophy, because if we keep believing in this completely failed healthcare system, we're going to have a deterioration of our health and as a society. We're going the wrong way.
How do we stop this? I mean, when I go, I'm right now between you and Dr. Danielle, I'm really screwed up because I have my glasses with me, and I'm in the grocery store, and I'm reading labels in the back. I know what's in everything that I'm eating. I'm paying attention to high fructose corn syrup. I'm paying attention to the out, you know, making sure that even when I try to go to get my granola and my cereal, I'm trying to pay attention to what's really inside of the food that I'm eating. Outside of my Oreo cookies, I haven't been able to give up yet. I'm doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you stop this cycle, because it has to become habitual?
How do you stop the cycle of eating the wrong foods?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, you have to become proactive and educate yourself, and knowledge is power. In other words, you have to educate yourself, and consumer beware. You know, so when we talk about these genetically modified organisms, what are they doing? They're genetically manipulating the genes of food seeds. So they're inserting viruses, bacteria, other DNA into the genes. They're injecting pesticides into the seeds. So, for instance, genetically modified corn came into our diet back in 1996. And what they did, they infused a toxin called a BT toxin into the corn. So when a bug or an insect goes to eat the corn, the BT toxin within the gene of the corn causes holes to go through the intestinal lining of the bug, of the pest. And that basically causes the bug to die. Okay? Now, guess what? That same toxin does the same thing to human intestinal walls. Okay? And it is destroying people's health. And people think, you know, it's no big deal, but research clearly shows this, and it's leading to gluten sensitivities, which is called gluten enteropathy, celiac disease. It's also been shown to incorporate into the DNA of your probiotics. So your probiotics, remember we discussed this in depth before, it makes your serotonin, makes your feel-good hormones. Okay, it's linked to autoimmune diseases, it's linked to Alzheimer's, it's linked to even cancers. So these GMO foods are totally disrupting our intestinal environments.
Eric in Alabama, your mic's on. Hold on, 207, your mic is on. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Yeah. Hello?
Oh, good. This is not Eric in Alabama. This is Troy from Youngstown.
Hi, Troy. How are you? Good morning.
All right. How you doing?
Good.
I wanted to add something to the conversation along with all this genetically engineered food. Like, it seems like a lot of the food right now is being genetically engineered for you to have a shorter life now. And to add another factor to that, there, if you look up sometime in the sky, they're spraying these chemtrails, like, over cities every day. What is that about? Does the doctor have any insight on that or anything like that?
I don't claim to be an expert on chemtrails, but there is definitely things being sprayed in the air, which is manipulating the weather. Manipulating the as far as the growth of plants in agriculture. So there are definitely toxins in the air that shouldn't be there. Let's leave it like that.
Yeah, because I'm like noticing these like symptoms, not just in me, but just in the children, you know what I'm saying, friends of mine. Everybody has these symptoms where there's like a, you know, excess of mucus in your body or just more than normal. And
Alzheimer's as well as children who are autistic. I've never seen so many autistic children.
Yeah. And, you know, and whether you want to really believe or focus on chemtrails or not, environmental pollution within the air is a huge, huge problem. I mean, there are, I forget how many millions of people a year are dying strictly due to environmental pollution. So, you know, where are we getting environmental pollution? We're getting it from the smokestacks. We're getting it from agricultural runoff from the herbicides and pesticides, which are going in the streams and then evaporating back in the air. I mean, we're showing we're getting toxins all the way from China, because guess what? Those toxins go up into the air, in the clouds, and then they come over here to the United States, and they rain down.
Because air moves.
And they rain down. I mean, this is not pseudoscience. This is the real deal. So the deal is we're not going to help with environmental pollution until we become aware of it and put healthy things into place. So there are things that we can control, and there's things that we can't. But a lot of things that we can control, focus on, you know, like I said, eating clean food, things that are more organic, growing your own food, stay away from GMO as much as possible, clean water, and supplement your diet.
Doc, none of the ingredients say GMO.
Wow.
That's the problem in the United States. There are 64 countries that are either banning GMOs or requiring labeling of GMOs so people can make a wise, intelligent decision to decide whether they want to buy that or not. Why can't we do that in the United States? Because the FDA is not your friend. The FDA is in bed with Monsanto.
Because none of it says GMO. I mean, what'd you say Alabama? I think that's you.
No,
they're just they're just in it to mass produce and make as much money as they possibly can.
One Hello, hand washes the other.
Hey, good morning, Stanley. Hold on just a second.
Yeah, it's become about greed. It's no longer about health, you know. So people are coming down with all these signs and symptoms of all these problems, and they're saying, well, the only thing we can do is put you on drugs. So money is in drugs. Money is not in wellness.
Stanley, go ahead.
I agree with the doctor. The money is on the drugs, not on the wellness. But I think that before the GMO, and I truly believe this, is I agree with the doctor, the FDA is not in our purpose, but if we want to resolve this issue, we have to come back to the basic. And the basic is we all need to go back to eating a plant-based diet. If we would all eat a plant-based diet, a lot of problems that we have in our health would not happen. We're more a meat, milk, egg society compared to going back to plant.
That's the whole problem.
I know you're not giving up your steak, Tracy, but if you keep on eating up your steak and you keep on eating on what you want to do, don't be surprised of the consequence of having cancer. Don't be surprised of having a heart attack. Don't be surprised of all this stuff.
I'm not giving up bacon either.
If you're not
giving up your steak, if you're not giving up working out, if you're not giving up this, do not be surprised later on the consequence of having a bad health.
Let's point out, too, there's another problem. The rhetoricians that work in tandem with these HMOs and these medical apparatus in this country, you know, puts out here, and most people buy it, that people are living longer, that living into the 80s and 90s was unheard of a couple of centuries ago. Daniel Boone lived to be 85. John Adams lived to be 91. Thomas Jefferson lived to be 84. Now, 84 is not really all that old as far as I'm concerned. But it was not uncommon, and a lot of it ties into, frankly, the spiritual path. Let's point that out too. Let's point out Let's put that variable in the calculus.
But it is, and there is a spiritual element to it. But hold on, Stanley. But even if you take a spiritual aspect, and if you even go to a biblical aspect, the Bible talks about what you ingest and how you should not be a glutton. Gluttony is a sin. And America is – hold, Stanley, let me finish. And gluttony is prominent in America on all fronts.
I'll tell you a huge statistical non sequitur that I ran across. Now, and this involves, like, the various denominations. On the one hand
– Don't go too deep, Eric.
Oh, no, I won't.
Because you headed that way.
No, I'll be okay. I'm going to fly just above the radar here. I'll be okay. The statisticians have come up with some sort of a differential – that points to ecumenical Protestants living longer than their conservative counterparts.
GMO.
No, but what I'm...
GMO, genetically modified organism. Go back. Come back.
Let me bring up one.
Come back to me. Hold on, Stanley. Go ahead.
One thing that came to mind is that corn, GMO food, corn was introduced into our diet within 1996.
Right.
An interesting study that I showed out of one of the main medical journals of allergies shows that from 1997, year after the corn was introduced, to 2008, 11 years into that, food allergies and food sensitivities increased by 50%.
Because I see more people that are allergic to gluten and flour now than ever before. It's amazing. I never thought about that.
That's directly linked to the GMO foods. Okay, now you could even go a step further. What GMO has been documented by some of the best researchers is that it also decreases DHA, which is docosahexaenoic acid, which is one of the main fatty acids that's in your brain, in your cell membranes, it's very important. So it decreases your DHA by 50%. It's very important for neurological function, especially for children when they're growing up. The GMOs also has been shown to suppress and interfere with a hormone called cholecystokinin. Cholecystokinin is very important for proper digestion and for satiety. Okay, so when you don't have proper digestion and satiety, meaning that you feel full right? We see how people are constantly wanting to eat.
Wow.
Go ahead, Alabama. Good morning.
What's going on?
How you doing this morning?
Doing all right. I agree with the guest. I feel as though the government is complicit in seeing that this stuff goes through. As far as the chemtrails, I was told that it takes our aluminum levels way up off the charts, and a lot of people, and when you take these cancers out of, these tumors out of people, it has aluminum in it. I feel, and that's what you're using your deodorant as well. So, this, I don't know.
I'm not giving up the deodorant.
I'm not that crazy to sit up here and just say that it's all just coincidence. I think the FDA, like you said, is complicit. I really do.
America cannot give up the deodorant. No, no. They got to use a crystal or something.
It's all types of deodorant.
Give up the deodorant.
You don't have to use aluminum-based deodorant is all I'm saying.
Don't give up the deodorant, please.
Don't let the red guard take a left turn.
Please.
Don't let the speed stick slow up.
Hey, good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm good, Tracy. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
I'm just listening. I don't have any questions really for the doctor here.
Well, that's pretty good.
Well, listen, Dr. Mason, when you talk about GMOs, what do you want to leave us with this month?
Basically, GMOs are frankenfoods. Your genes have no idea what to do with them. There's studies showing that they are wreaking havoc on your health, so avoid them as much as possible. Avoid them as much as possible. You know, one more thing. These restaurants have switched to canola oil, thinking that it's better for you. But, again, that's genetically modified oil, which is very, very detrimental to your health. It's interfering with people's pancreas, having allergenic reactions to the pancreas, which is interfering with the insulin production, leading to diabetes. So you have to go back to eating a whole food diet. As Stanley was saying, go back to your roots. Eat majority of a plant-based diet. There's nothing wrong with eating healthy proteins, but get the properly raised proteins, and go that route and live your life.
Yeah. And Tracy, I'm sorry.
You gonna
stay
with us for a little while, or you have to run?
I'm gonna hang out for a bit.
Well, good. Dr. Brandy's just came in the studio. We've got Eric here with me. I'm going to take my break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll be right back.
Do you find yourself constantly tired? Do you have pain, migraine, headaches, or digestive upsets? Or you just feel like your immune system is weak? Call Dr. Matt Mason at Mason Wellness, 330-219-6250, or visit our website at masonwellness.com.
Boardman Frame House Gallery, a professional frame shop and art gallery at the Mark Shopping Center in Poland at Routes 224 and 680. We specialize in original, limited, and antique lithographs of both renowned nationally published artists and local artists. We have over 30 years of award-winning custom design and archival framing. We give your artwork a unique presentation that enhances its value for life. Let your home or office express something individual and unique with a fine art limited edition print signed by the artist and numbered. You'll find many unique and affordable fine art editions. Visit us in the Mark Shopping Center. Find the Greenwich Workshop Catalog. And for any print or canvas you order, you get 50% off the frame for that fine art edition. Find us on Facebook or call us at 330-758-5795. That's 330-758-5795.
I need a data backup solution for my business to replace my current
tape. WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren. The home for afternoons with Tracy and friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Richard Davies. Iraqi troops have abandoned their posts as the extreme Islamist group ISIS gains control of cities in northern Iraq. The group says it's heading for Baghdad next. Hundreds of thousands of people have fled their homes out of fear of the group and possible airstrikes. by both the U.S. and Iraqi government forces. ABC's Alex Marquardt is in Beirut.
Though the White House has called the situation grave, there's no sign for now that the U.S. wants to get involved. So ISIS continues its march that threatens not only to break Iraq apart, but to destabilize the entire region. Alex Marquardt, ABC News, Beirut.
The Iraqi government is pleading with the U.S. for airstrikes against the insurgents. Police in Phoenix, Arizona, saying a Catholic priest has been shot and killed, another hospitalized with unspecified injuries in an attack at a downtown church. The World Cup opening up later today in Brazil. The host nation, though, has been hit by a lot of unrest. This is the world's biggest sporting competition. 32 nations taking part, including the U.S. ESPN sports analyst Julie Fowley is in Rio.
Whenever you talk about Brazil and football in the same sentence, they talk about it as this religion. It's in their soul. It's this spirit amongst them. It brings such happiness. And yet when you walk around before this World Cup, you hear anger, you hear sadness, and that's all about the $12 billion they've been spending and the corruption.
The first match is Brazil versus Croatia. Anger over what are said to be miserable conditions for many thousands of children from Central America. They've been rounded up by U.S. border control agents arriving without legal papers in the Southwest, many of them unaccompanied. The children are said to have fled violent areas in Honduras, El Salvador, and other nations. This is ABC News.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for 30.
Hello? Where
yeah,
everybody
up?
At?
What's up?
Hey, Diva.
578-335.
General Motors facing mounting legal problems.
Yes.
Hey, Diva, did you hear the thing that I heard yesterday in the news? Well, in the news in Tracy, that they say that Americans basically stop thinking that they don't think that they're overweight. They look at themselves, they I look fine and everything, even though specifically they are overweight or even obese. But they look at themselves, I don't have so much weight problem. I think it's 65% for men and 50% for women who are acting that way. For denying that they have a health problem.
Oh no, Stanley. I mean, I'm overweight. I'm 215 pounds, 6 foot.
No. Wait.
I'm supposed to be 170.
No. You know what I'm talking about. It's not overweight. It depends of your percentage of body.
Talking about the fat people.
Exactly. I'm talking about the fat.
Yeah,
I'm
You're over 30%. You're in trouble.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about
hey, 25 ain't that good. You can have heart.
Yeah, I'm not talking about you being 250, but I'm sure if I put you in the scale of a body size thing, you must be maybe 15 or 13%. I'm not even talking about you. I'm talking about the people.
No, I ain't saying it like that. What I'm saying is sometimes these people, they vacillate between what they want. Just like on the Forbes list, they said Baby was number four, but he grossed $160 million. Jay-Z, they just like Jay-Z, so they put him on a list at number three, and you're saying he's worth half a billion, which I question, but even still. So it's just what people want to use.
I agree, but I'm talking about the people that I know that are 30% fat, and they just look at people, and they say, oh, you're okay. That's what I'm talking about. Women and
men. Trust me, you and I both know we're talking about black women primarily. I know what you're talking about. I'm thick. You know, I'm thinking a good way. You know.
So I don't understand. I think it's because men, we stop putting the standard that we need. No, you need to be fit. You need to go to the gym. You need to do what you got to do.
Well, see, these guys need to raise their standards themselves. They got low self-esteem. They don't want these women looking like nothing.
Of course, I agree. And I want to ask Diva, what's happening with these women? You don't have no pride anymore.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. It is 5 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and it is the 12th of, can you believe it, the 12th of June?
Crazy.
I mean, can we just slow this down just a little bit? Because, one, bills keep coming around on the 1st, and it has to slow down so I can, like, get something done between the 1st and the 1st. If you guys can make that happen, I would greatly appreciate it. Dr. Brandy's in the studio with me, and Dr. Brandy comes here on behalf of Turning Point Counseling, which is a behavioral health. But let me say this. I asked her to talk about, we have young people going into buildings now on an ongoing basis, shooting up the world, stabbing people, just losing their mind. And we're blaming everything on behavioral health. We're blaming everything on mental illness. And my problem with this is I think it's because we haven't put any disciplines inside of our young people to give them control. So I need to know, you know, is some of it mental, or is, well, I know some of it can be.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but is some of it behavioral? I mean, come on.
This is where I struggle with it, because every time there is a act of violence in the schools, a school shooting or whatnot, immediately the media focuses on mental health issues. And I struggle with that because the majority of people with mental health or behavioral health issues are not violent. But then we see these issues, you know, hitting the media, emphasizing the mental illness of these individuals, and then it starts to stigmatize the stigma.
Of mental health.
Of mental health, right. And so it hurts all of these other individuals who aren't violent. On the other hand, it's probably not just mental health with these individuals. Clearly, there is something that they're struggling with. But it's not just, oh, this person's depressed, so this is an excuse for what they did.
I mean, because one young man, he was upset because he couldn't get a date. He couldn't. Nobody would go out with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had this manifesto on YouTube. He goes off on this, and he goes and kills this girl and his roommates and all this stuff. And I'm going,
how does somebody go from not being able to get a date to being a school shooter or a convicted murderer? Right. And the issue is that we don't really truly know. I mean, you've seen, or many have seen, the attempts to profile these individuals or to identify a core reason, and there truly isn't just one reason out there. But what I will say is that we need to be mindful of what people are struggling with and how they're being treated, and keep an eye out for them for changes or whatnot so that we can intervene. That doesn't mean that we can stop an impulse, because most suicide attempts are an impulse. Most acts of violence are an impulse, meaning there wasn't a lot of planning. Now, in some cases, you could see that there was a clear, thought-out process involved when it came to the school shootings. And those ones, I think we struggle with, how didn't somebody notice? Or when it comes out, you hear people saying, well, I wondered about that, or I saw that. So where are the resources in place for these individuals to help them before they get to that point?
I agree.
They're there.
Well, are they?
One person, I mean, there should be.
We can't.
One guy was going, he had been going to a physician for a while.
Mm-hmm. Right. So
the parents knew when they saw the shooting, they knew it was him.
That's sad, but there's this huge lobbying effort right now in multiple states to look at involuntary hospitalization criteria. We call it pink slipping here. You can't take somebody's rights away from them unless they meet a certain criteria. So unless you come in and you're assessed to be actively psychotic or a risk to self or others, a high risk, meaning you're saying that I'm thinking of killing this person on this date, well, then I can involuntarily commit you. Or I'm thinking of killing myself in this way, I can involuntarily commit you. But a lot of these individuals have this fleeting suicide or homicidal ideation. I just want to hurt people, or sometimes I get so mad that I just want to kill myself. Well, you're not meeting a criteria that allows me to legally take your rights away from you and involuntarily commit you. And so these individuals that we're seeing in the media, they kind of fall in that gray area where we can't legally take your rights away from you, we can't offer you these services, but we have to allow you your freedom. It's the same with when we close all of the institutions for mentally ill individuals.
Hey,
we said it was dehumanized. We were dehumanizing people. Well, where are these individuals?
They're all
hey,
over.
Tracy?
Hey, yeah.
Tracy. I had a question for the doctor.
Go ahead.
Now, a lot of the most recent shootings, I mean, there was a lot of warning signs. Now, I wanted your opinion as far as the treatment. I mean, would it be safe to say that you have to look at this treatment kind of the same way you look at it, someone who has an alcohol or drug addiction? I mean, let's face it. If the person is mentally ill and they don't want help, then you're wasting your time and money and resources trying to help them.
Well, I mean, there's different ways to look at that. A lot of people do come or are referred for treatment, and they don't necessarily want to own their issue or want to work towards their issue, but it doesn't mean that we can't provide a support network for them, but we can't force anybody to do anything. We can't force people to stop drinking. We can't force people to come to counseling.
Now, let me ask you this. We know that exercise helps.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise has been taken, it's really, really being taken out of the curriculum of schools.
Mm-hmm.
We're focusing so much on academia that we're taking away the physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
Does that play a part into our mental health also?
I think not just physical, and I'm sure that Dr. Mason can talk about the physical aspect, but when we look at the pressure that we're putting on our youth, I mean, children aren't out, they're going to school for so many hours, they're coming home with so many hours of homework, there's no freedom in their life, there's no outlets like PE classes, and so there's so much between the pressure and the bullying and the perfectionism and paired with maybe a mental health issue. I mean, that's a lot on a little one's shoulders.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it has a lot to do with...
Oh, his mic is not up. Eric, turn up one down the bottom, please.
Mm-hmm.
Try again now, Doc.
Hello.
Try again. One, the little tiny...
Turn it to the right.
To the right. The little tiny one's at the bottom.
Yeah.
All right, we all know?
We're on now.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with many different factors, you know, with, like you were saying, your structure in the family has completely changed all the way down to exercise and diet, because just as we were talking about the GMO foods, how it's shown to decrease your DHA in your brain, which is a very important fatty acid, especially for neurological development as a young kid. So if these kids aren't getting healthy foods, how do you expect their brain to function right? I mean, when you're getting all these chemicals and dyes and flavorings and colorings and genetically modified organisms and high amounts of sugar and monosodium glutamate, all these what we call neurotoxins and cytotoxins into the diet, guess what? They're not just going in your mouth. They're circulating through your bloodstream and through your brain. If you have neurotransmitters within your brain, you think those chemicals, dyes, and colorings and stuff aren't going to interfere on the receptors of your brain? They do. So, you know, I think there's multiple aspects of, rather than just saying, you know, they were born wrong or their connections just didn't connect right. You know, I think we have to look at all those different aspects.
Dr. Brandon?
Tracy?
Hold on, Stanley.
I would have to agree that I don't think that people are genetically born. Most research mm-hmm. would say people aren't genetically born with violent tendencies, that they're kind of nurtured within the individual through one means
their,
or
their
another.
Their environment.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Absolutely.
And, you know, just even thinking about the nutrition, I hadn't even realized the emphasis on that for children. So having a child myself and putting cartoons on in the morning and whatnot, it's interesting because in between the breaks, these little characters come on. One's like a big broccoli and one's a ham sandwich, and they fight the fried food. And they talk about how fried food impacts the individual. And it's just how they're trying to kind of lay the groundwork so early in life about how the healthy food choices matter in terms of your development.
Go ahead, Stanley.
The thing I want to ask the doctor and the two doctors and everything, yesterday I think in the news there was a service that basically went to people, and a lot of people are in denial that they're overweight or obese. I think they said that the big
biggest problem a lot of people is they think that they're okay when it's been proven that they're not. And I think that the doctor would agree the first step for any problem that you have is to first say that you have a problem.
This is not the hate fat people day.
It has nothing to do with fat people. It has to do with our health as a nation. It has nothing to do with fat people. But if we
Stanley,
do not
come
see
back.
That there's a
Stanley, come
I'm coming back.
Come
coming
back.
Okay, I'm coming.
We're talking about
okay.
We're talking about killings in our campuses of our schools. Come back to the babies. Come back to the young people.
Okay,
so our
the killing
campuses.
And the coming of our school is
come
basically
back.
because a lot of people want to when you, a lot of people want to have a goal in life, and if they don't see any way to accomplish it, like that kid who basically wanted to have a date and everything or have women, and he couldn't see anybody coming to him and saying, it's okay, it's normal to be rejected, it's okay. Nobody taught them that. So basically he was like saying, there's no solution, so I need to kill people.
Let me say this.
He
Let
was
me
suffering.
Ask this Dr. Brandy. Let me ask Dr. Brandy this. I was watching a movie yesterday on Lifetime,
mm-hmm.
and it was about a high school that was very, very sexually active.
Mm-hmm.
And the pressure that was put on the young ladies and the young men who did not want to be sexually active and how they were ostracized
mm-hmm.
and the mental issues that they were having because of it.
Yeah,
and so when you look at this young man,
mm-hmm.
because as I think Dr. Mason alluded, things have changed
mm-hmm.
drastically in the upbringing of young people, where what people thought about in high school 20 years ago, 10 years ago.
It's not the same.
No.
Mm-mm.
And so how do we deal with this when we're from a whole other generation where we don't even think our children are even having that kind of pressure?
Mm-hmm. Right, we don't think until, you know, I have a child who's in my office and is 11 or 12 and pregnant. You know, we don't think that. Society has changed and children's experiences and adolescents' experiences have changed, and we haven't quite caught up yet. And the impact of peer pressure and then the impact of not being accepted by your social norm, I mean, that is a kid's world. That's the world that they live in, and they haven't developed the confidence or the protective factors that an adult might have to be able to say, you know what, this doesn't matter to me. They also don't have the ability to remove themselves from the environment. We as an adult, we can change jobs if we want. We can choose not to go to this location if we want. A kid needs to go to school. It's legal. They have to go to, I mean, there's homeschooling, there's other options, but, I mean, that's not always viable for. So these kids are really victims in many ways of community that they're in.
That's true. That's true. Because children don't have a choice of where they go, do they?
No, mm-hmm. it's true.
And parents don't always understand when children are having behavioral problems about what's, because I mean, how do you come home and tell your mom that the problem that I'm having is I can't get a date because I won't have sex?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you have that conversation?
Right. That's a hard conversation to have. And then
how does mom answer that? Or mom or dad answer that?
Assuming, of course, the parents have a moral gauge themselves, which is becoming more and more of a premium in this country.
But see, that's something different.
Mm-hmm.
Parental involvement is different than coming home and having the parent.
My hunch is that if the kids that are coming home with that concern probably have parents who have instilled a certain value system in them. But yeah, how do you have that conversation? And what, as a parent, do you do? I mean, you encourage your child, you support them in their value system and the choices that they've made, but there's that pressure there. And it's really hard to remove them from that environment. I mean, I can even think of when I was little, the school district that we lived in, the year after we moved out, there was a school shooting. The little boy, I can remember him, and I was young, rode our bus. It was clear he didn't fit in. No, you know, he was just a kind of a social outcast. And a girl played a joke on him and said she'd go to the school dance with him.
Ooh.
And
wow.
It was a joke, and he shot at her and a teacher, and I believe killed the teacher. But
killed the teacher.
My point is, I was little and knew that this child needed help. Like, it was that there was definitely somebody needed to reach out. And then how did you, when the most popular girl in school asks the kid who's a social outcast to a dance, how does an adult not pick up on that in the school district and intervene?
Yeah.
Like, those types of things concern me.
Hold on. 440. Hold on. 440, your mic is on.
Hey, Tracy,
Hello.
It's AJ.
Good morning, AJ. How are you?
I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, you guys are talking about schools and stuff like that. I'm still in high school, so I definitely have seen everything that you guys are talking about, these types of students. I go to a very small school, so it's not as often, but every school has them. And, it hurts me when I see students that you can tell that either their home life is bad or they're being mistreated in school.
Mm-hmm. Because bullying has been around forever.
It's different now, though.
But how is it so much different now? Because they say the bullying is causing people to snap. I think one of the shootings in one of the schools, a kid went in there because he was so overwhelmingly bullied, he just wanted to get back at everybody, so he shot at the world.
You think about it, you can't escape with their social media. You don't leave environments anymore. You used to go to school, come home, spend time in your neighborhood with your friends. Now you go to come home, log in, you're being bullied through social media, you're being bullied at school,
yeah.
You're maybe being bullied in your family.
Hold on, Stanley.
It's so hard to escape. And how do you stop that? Once your child is targeted, how do you stop that from continuing? Do you go and talk to the principal and go talk to the kids?
That doesn't help.
You block them off the timeline. That's all you do.
Right.
You knock them off the timeline, but knocking them off your timeline is not going to stop. When you come to school the next day and everybody has this rumor about you.
When I was in school, it was real simple. My dad and mom used to tell me this. If somebody touched you or something, you drag them, you beat them real bad. One good time, it's over. I know that's barbaric nowadays. People don't even spank their kids no more. But we're getting too soft, and it's showing. I'm sorry. I got cats. I was sitting there minding my business. A cat bigger than me walked up, just slapped me for nothing. We turning. We fighting. I'm fighting this dude. I'm like, why did he hit me while I'm fighting him? But you gotta. I went to a black poor school, so you just gotta. That makes you a better person
the days are different. You just don't get to fight anymore. People would just fought. You can't do that now and not have serious repercussions. You can get expelled for a good fight.
And then now the kid who's being victimized is now possibly being expelled because they've tried to defend themselves.
If I came home from fighting, it wasn't nothing. Mama would be like, all right. Go on in your room. We'll take you to school in a couple of days. It's whatever. Parents got to know. Look, I had a guy call my dad one time. I was playing basketball, and I pushed the guy, trying to make him miss the shot. I wasn't trying to hurt him, and this was at a camp. And they called my dad, and my dad was like, he said, okay, well, I'm going to get on to him. He got off the phone and was like, that's what I'm talking about. Dap me up.
See, no. Alabama.
You play hard.
It can't
work like that now. What'd you say, Diva?
The time is so different. I look at when I was a kid, I was smaller than everybody. They'd try to bully me. Yeah, I got a mouth. And, yeah, I put them in their place. When I look at the kids nowadays, that just doesn't seem to work. It makes it worse. It makes it worse. Now, these kids will pack up, hang up, boys bullying girls now, and not gay, not heterosexual boys, but actual straight boys are now starting to, at least that's what's happening in my daughter's school. And
what?
You go to the principal.
Alabama. Diva, go back to the scenario again so we can understand what's happening now in that school.
Boys are now starting to bully on girls. And it's getting getting ridiculous. You can go to the principal all you want. Their hands are tied. You can go to the parent. I know a parent who is dealing with her son because he's a big bully. And she's like, I don't know what to do. She punishes him. She disciplines him. He's still just a bully. He fights.
Brandy,
people fight back against him. He's still a bully.
How do we deal with this? Because it deals with, being ostracized by your peers.
Mm-hmm.
Children are mean.
Very.
And it has a very, very long-lasting impact
mm-hmm.
on people.
Well, because start to form your identity as a child, and then you carry that victim mindset through into adulthood. I mean, honestly, the key is early intervention and consistency. We don't necessarily intervene as early as we should. However, I don't want to place blame because oftentimes we don't know what something's going to grow into. So how much of an early intervention is needed? You know, hindsight's 20/20.
We no longer have a traditional family for the most part.
Mm-mm.
And we're blending families, and the dynamic of blending families is not always healthy because you're bringing stepkids together that may or may not be, you know, compatible and have the chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
You're changing the dynamic. So young people are going into a lot of areas that are very new to most of us.
Yeah, it's definitely not, you know, the days of the Cleavers anymore or whoever.
No.
I forget what that is.
It was Cleavers. You got it right. You got that right. Jeez, old man.
Yeah. But at the same time, how much was hidden back then? I mean, we don't know what happened behind closed doors, but certainly we're exposed to so much more today. And
were hidden, but things were simpler. I mean, today it's very complex.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk about mental health, how do I be proactive with either young people or even with myself? Because a lot of things that my children are acting out are my own personal demons as an adult.
Well, yeah, we certainly project onto our children, but we need to act early, as soon as we can.
How do I do?
If your child comes home and tells you that they're being picked on, take time to ask your child what's happening. What specifically was being said? Who did it? In what context? Who did the child tell? Call the teacher. Ask the teacher about the dynamic in that classroom. Ask the principal about the dynamic in the school. Gather all the information as a parent so that you can make an informed decision about your child's needs and hopefully doing that with your child as well.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I have a question. I was just wondering, okay, I think it was 2 weeks ago, my daughter had a situation, there's no privacy in my house. My daughter has a cell phone, and I'm scrolling through her. Someone told me, go look through her phone, and I'm like, oh, she's got Kick. So I'm looking through the messages. One of her friends messaged her, said that he has a big red stain on his bed, and it's getting bigger and bigger, and then he starts saying stuff like, I just wanted to tell you goodbye forever. I'll never see you again. So I asked my daughter, I said, what is this about? What's going on? She said, well, such and such, he cuts himself. And I was like, well, Alexis, why didn't you come and tell me this? It happened the night before. I said, this little boy is basically trying to commit suicide. And what do you do when your child is basically like, mom, don't get involved, don't do anything? Me personally, I went to the school about it. I had to go to the school because I was like, Lexi, I'm not going to sit here and allow some little boy, he's crying out for help, whether you think he means it or not. I mean, for him to slit his wrist and saying that he's saying goodbye to you, that is a serious cry for help. And
right, it is a
what
cry
do you
for
do
help.
When your child does not want you to get involved? Because she felt like I was going to make the situation worse for her in school.
I think that's a good example. And what I appreciate is that you acted as a parent. You are the parent. You are the adult in this situation, not the friend or the child in this situation. And so, yes, it might make your daughter frustrated with you, but you could have also saved a life. And in the end, that's what matters the most. Also, we don't know if he was trying to kill himself. You know, Tracy pointed out that self-injury isn't necessarily a suicide attempt, but regardless, there was a call for help in some respect. This child needed attention, needed an intervention, and so you as an adult needed to take those steps to help in whatever way to get the child the services that they need. You know, we forget sometimes that children live in, you know, teenagers live in their world. What matters most is what's going to happen at school. Is that kid going to be mad at her? What are the other kids going to say that are around her? You know, is she the tattletale or whatever cool term they use for that these days?
We're so disconnected.
I don't know what it is. But in the
You're
end,
snitch.
Is it snitch? I don't think that's the word they use. Is it?
Hell
yes.
What's that? Is it snitch?
It's snitch.
I don't know.
Yes.
Well, that's like old school too, it seems. All right. Well, she's the snitch, but in the end, we have to be the adults and act in a responsible manner. So.
But so many so-called parents aren't. Mm-hmm. I was kind of ostracized as a young person.
I wonder why.
And
she's bullying you right here in the studio.
Listen, do you know how many four syllable words you say in this room? I can see that. But you went to Mooney. You should have fit in.
I went to Mooney. Mooney isn't always
awesome. But no, I'm talking about earlier.
All schools have their issues.
I'm talking about earlier. Before I went to Mooney, there was a social disconnect, and a lot of times, if my mother and the mothers of some of these miscreants were friends, quote unquote, then a lot of what happened to me was sort of whitewashed and justified and yada yada yada. It only got to a point when I started comparing them to apes and saying things like, well, I didn't need a wheelbarrow to learn how to walk on my hind legs. I got real quick-witted that all of a sudden I was wrong, you know, when I would finally fly off the handle, you know, and get physical, that all of a sudden I was wrong. And it created a real double standard, and it really galvanized my resolve, my hatred for liberalism, revisionism, and the selective morality that's engendered by it, which brings me to the next point. We didn't have all this craziness in the schools when the liberals weren't calling the shots. Period.
Didn't I tell you?
Didn't I say
we were not talking politics today? I'm doing good. It's health and wellness. It is universal. It is non-political.
You practically justified the mess I went through when I was a kid.
But can I ask you?
I'm not justifying it. It was real. Can you imagine being black in an all-white school and them telling you you're not smart? Not because you are... You know, you're dumb, but because you're just black and because you're different and you want to read, and you go to a black school and they tell you they don't like you because you talk white.
You're too white. Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, we all got our little demons going on.
Try having
Hello?
That in your family, and you're dealing with that on a daily basis, and school was your outlet.
And
family is
a whole
other
issue with a whole other different dynamics.
My family was polarized. So everyone
has it. The difference is the difference between then and now is it is just magnified, because not only do you have one set of family, you've got blended families, you've got social media, you've got everybody is as unruly. Because, see, at one time, if Brandy and I were friends,
mm-hmm.
my parent and her parents, they usually had the same moral ideal.
Mm-hmm.
We had to be home by 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't allowed to go out and dress like prostitutes. You know,
how you got to the car and changed.
That's what I'm saying. But you know, you couldn't. But you had. There were certain levels of foundation that both parents had.
Mm-hmm.
Boys
were
not allowed in your room.
And
boys were not allowed in your room. You couldn't go. I couldn't go over Brandy's house unless my mom knew her,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. All this, you know, if she had a brother, they were very cautious of the brother and us, mm-hmm. because they knew us. You don't have that kind of parental oversight anymore.
No.
There's no telling what you're going
to
get.
I told my daughter I wasn't too strict. I told her it wasn't just me.
Well, and that concerns me.
What do you say?
That concerns me that, I mean, how do you send your child into any situation where you don't know what they're walking into? I mean, that's questionable.
But most parents don't do that. I mean, I can send my child to anybody's home, and they just stay there all day long, and they don't know the parents.
We haven't had any real morally based parental structure commonplace in this country since Herbert Hoover was in the White House.
Eric,
and in many ways,
Professor,
we don't teach morals in the schools anymore.
Behavioral health, mental issues. Because, and let me say this, and the reason why the parents are disconnected is because of their own psychological
issues.
Mishaps.
Issues.
And what they're, I would say, what they're dealing with that they have not addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unresolved issues aren't going to go away. They're going to eat at you and come out somehow. Sometimes we're not even conscious of the way that they are exposing themselves, but they're going to creep out. So if you're an adult who hasn't addressed an issue, now's the time to do it. Now is the time to start. I mean, sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. I tell everybody that, because you're bringing it all to the surface and putting it out and re-experiencing those feelings and reliving a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's out and worked through, you can sort of package it up, so to speak, and set it aside and move forward without that nagging at you anymore.
But you have to address it, don't you? You have to acknowledge
it.
Yeah,
you have to bring it out.
You have to say that I have a problem.
Several of their so-called parents tried to reach out to me. Oh, Eric, you were always such a good kid, yada, yada, yada. And what I've turned it into an art form. You know, I love getting around people in my
parents' generation and calling them bold-faced liars.
Hey!
I've released it.
That's not releasing it. It's because what I have learned is, it's not necessarily going back and backlashing at the people that hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
It's me dealing with it internally, where I can deal with it and get rid of it.
You know, you said a key point though, backlashing and going after the people that hurt me. When we take these school shootings, which is sort of
right.
where we started, I guess. That's what we hear a lot of times are the students acting out, like, you hurt me, I'm going to get back at you.
Retaliation.
And I'm not, you know, when somebody gets into that mindset, let's take suicide, for example. If I have a client or somebody who's contemplating suicide, most often when they have made the decision to kill themselves, I will not know. Because they've come to a place of peace. The pain is going to end. They know what the resolution is. Oftentimes, we see a symptom relief because we start to see a greater level of contentment, a greater level of happiness, because it's all going to end. You know, so in the same respect, I'm wondering how that crosses over, and the research is all over the place with the school shootings, but, you know, when you've made a decision to act out in violence because you've been bullying, do we start to see improvement in these individuals? Do we start to see a greater calmness, a greater and then we tend to instinctually step back because we're thinking, wow, look, little Johnny's getting better. But when in turn, actually, that when we see somebody who's been struggling, quickly get better all of a sudden, that is usually when we need to be the most involved. However, it's when we step off the most.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends.
Yeah, hello.
This is so sad, so sad. The stigma of mental illness is what prevents people from getting treated.
We've had 74 school shootings in Sandy Hook. I graduated in 1990. From kindergarten until 1990, there wasn't one school shooting. I had enough guns between my dad and my grandfather to run a small army. I got picked on almost every day, and I never thought about getting those guns and shooting up my school.
But you didn't suffer from a mental illness.
But
just
Eva, wait,
itself is not indicative of mental illness. It's how somebody reacts and handles the pressures of society. And necessarily,
exactly.
It's not just the pressure of society. It's an actual brain disorder, dysfunction that is going on.
But Diva, before you say it's always a brain dysfunction, I would defer that. A lot of that, it's not a brain dysfunction. It is what you said in the beginning. It is because of the pressure of society, or the pressure that they have of their lives, and they don't know how to handle that pressure.
I didn't say brain disorder. I said it's not just the fact that they're dealing with pressure and not knowing nor understanding how to handle it. But if you do an MRI, if you do an in-depth brain study on people who suffer from genuine mental illness, you will see a disconnect with the way the brain processes information.
I agree with you, but by the same time, Diva, many of those people, I'm sure before it becomes a mental illness and you have to go to pharmacy and things like that, a lot of them, I think if we would get the psychologists, if we get the specialists, if we would do what we need to do to get them to basically, or the parent to do what he needs to do, a lot of them would have issues. A lot of them are basically yelling.
Because the guy who was shot up at the college students, the guy in Las Vegas, he was getting help. That's what you understand, is that you can only do so much in the mental illness field because it takes a person who wants to get better. Mental illness is the most difficult disorder that you can treat. A person got a broken leg, you could treat that. A person gets cut, you could treat that, no problem. But dealing with a person who is mentally ill is very, very difficult because, one, sometimes they don't acknowledge they have a problem. Two, they don't know how to deal with the problem. And three, if they start feeling better, they'll stop their going to therapy, they'll stop their medication, and then the cycle starts all over again.
Yes, but maybe there's a better way to help those people and everything. There's not just psychologists who can help them. There's many people who found technique or ways to help them. NLP exists also. There's many things
can you hear me?
Hey, Peter, go ahead.
Yeah,
hello?
Man, you know when you were talking earlier about the food and the GMO and all that stuff, and she changed the subject talking about mental illness and guns and stuff. That's related because when a child's in the womb and they're developing, if the child doesn't get the right hormones and chemicals, minerals and supplements, then they don't form properly, and you get these chemical imbalances when they're developed.
What do you say
when
it's a vegan who's committed suicide? You're trying to make it seem as food is
please.
The problem.
Please show me one. It is very rare. Very rare.
It doesn't matter that it's very rare.
It does matter.
You had suicides long before GMOs became mainstream.
Yes.
People were killing
them.
People were committing homicides against people. You had schizophrenia. You had bipolar disorder long before our food was getting messed up.
But I
how do you explain it then?
But I think that. Go ahead. I don't think it's the food that are getting messed up. I think it's the choices that us as people are making that we don't want to let go of the meat. We don't want to let go of the dairy. We don't want to let go of those things, and we're focusing on GMO and things like that. But the biggest problem is those things. Let go of those things first.
That's not the biggest problem when it comes to
Have you done experiments on kids? And you don't know this stuff. You just saying that.
No, what do you mean
treatment.
I don't know this stuff? Are you serious?
You don't. I know for a fact you don't.
Okay, sure.
I'm sorry, Dr. Beaver is about to enlighten us on genetics.
Okay.
Please give us a lecture. Please, go.
When I was in the ninth grade, people were not bringing AR-15s to high school, shooting people and then shooting themselves.
7945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
What happiness is you? Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It's 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and it is the 12th of June, 2014. I have Dr. Brandy and Dr. Mason in studio with me, and I said today I want to talk about stop the killing, because if we're not killing ourselves one way, from our eating, from our lack of taking care of our health and wellness, we are allowing our children, which are becoming more and more violent now, to either kill themselves or to go out and kill others. Suicide rates are high. And then next hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. Carl Hart. He's written a book called High Price, and it's about drug use. And we're self-medicating. We need to really take a serious look at what's going on. Who has the radio on? TV, mute your phone, please. Hold on. Mute your phone.
Yeah.
Whoever got the radio on. Thank you very much.
I give a lot of credit to the police departments and law enforcement agencies that have participated in a lot of the crisis intervention trainings that have been offered, because they're often our first responders. And so this CIT training is what we call it in our community, but it's basically an effort to educate law enforcement on the mental health needs of the community, and then de-escalation and intervention strategies. And I've noticed that in the media there's been a lot of conversation about that, and then obviously when there's an effort like that, there's research around it looking at the effectiveness of training these professionals. And one of the recent acts of violence, it was a CIT-trained police officer who stepped in and essentially de-escalated the situation. Unfortunately, the shooter had killed himself. I mean, it's still a loss, but saved many, many lives by knowing what to look for and knowing how to respond.
What is causing so many? I mean, right now on our campuses, and when I was in school, I don't remember anybody showing up and shooting up the place. you know, we went from Columbine.
I mean, there was like 10 shooting, and that was played.
Yeah, Tracy, that's what I was going to say, Tracy.
And it was isolated.
Hey, Tracy.
What'd you say, Eric?
We had... I remember, man, we would have food fights. That was about as crazy as it got, man.
Yeah.
Kids weren't bringing AR-15s to school.
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Mason, I want you to jump in on the conversation. What is going on with, what would make me go and say, okay, I hate everybody at work. Let me go shoot them all up, stab them with a gun, kill my roommates, and then shoot myself in the head. Hello?
Craziness.
Can I make a comment?
Sure. Go ahead.
I think like a lot of this, you know, disorder that is happening is because of the kids nowadays don't have like the strong parenting that we had when we were coming up. Like the one my one man here said he was graduated in 1990. I graduated in 1989, and back then your parents were involved in every aspect of your growing up. They were involved in you know, all your sports activities, your homework activities, the friends you hung around. They made sure that you came in at a certain time. And nowadays it seems like the school is just a place where the parents, because they have so many problems in their own life, that they just send the kids there to, you know what I'm saying, because, look, go there and for a certain amount of time because I got my own problems right now. And they end up being taught by things like, which they spend more time with, like video games, like stuff like Grand Theft Auto, the rap music that's programming these kids into thinking, you know what I'm saying, how these guys live is reality. And that's what they're missing right now. I don't agree with every, you know what I'm saying, there's every time that a kid has a problem or something that you have to prescribe a pill for it. I don't believe that. I believe that there are some kids with that, you know what I'm saying, that have severe disorders that you have to, but not all of them. I just think that you have to have more closeness now with your family, you know what I'm saying, so they'll have a more self-esteem about themselves when they're in these situations, in these schools, around these other kids.
I want to comment. Can I comment, please?
Go ahead, Minty.
Sure.
All right. I hear all that. I hear what everybody's saying. Parents was more involved. I was born in the 80s. I graduated. I was in school in the 90s to 2000. Okay. I hear all that. But for me personally, a lot of my low self-esteem issues that I had started from my mother and inside of my home. She was Hold on. She was involved in everything that I did. She was very strict, but we didn't have no bond. I didn't care for her. I won't say I don't care for her. I was trying to have something with her, but it never happened. My child plays video games, does all that stuff, and we have a closer bond than me and my mother would ever have. So we can't, we can't blame all of it on the school and season and all that, because your foundation is in the home. If you're taught self-preservation, if you're taught how to be self-motivated, if you're taught that very strong inside yourself, you will carry that on, and you won't get so affected. If you have a relationship with your parents, if something goes on in school, you're going to open your mouth, you're going to talk, you're going to say something. But it's about that relationship with that parent. So I hear everything about...
Hold on a minute. Because I want Dr. Brandy to. I want to ask you something with her. What she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
How do I need to start? You know, I said to everyone that everyone needs to go to a psychologist at some time and sit down, or a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down and have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Even as adults, if nothing's wrong, I'm going back to what I was talking to Dr. Mason about, chiropractic care.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's wrong, but I need to go get a wellness check on my spine.
Right, you should. It would be lovely if insurance would reimburse for a wellness check on our mind. But I do agree that that's a whole other issue. But I do agree
that
it's helpful to check in. And, you know, both the callers were talking about parenting. There are different parenting styles, and there are also different needs that children have. And it sounds like the one caller that, I don't know the details, but mom was very involved, but there was no emotional connection. There's oftentimes there's situations where there's too much of an emotional connection, that it becomes a friendship. There's disengagement. There's so many different factors. Parents sometimes assume that they're the greatest parents in the world and their children hate them. You know, so we need to have conversations with each other, and if we can't do that on our own, which most often we can't be, it's hard to because we're not objective, it's nice to have a mental health professional to sit there and help guide your conversation. I mean, just to check in and see what you're doing.
Wow.
I also think, too, that as I listen to the callers, I wish that there were one isolating factor that we could say, you know, this is why this happened, but we can't. And that's what makes it so hard, because each situation is unique, and so we can't pinpoint and say this caused it or this caused it or this caused it. Believe me, the FBI have profiled research inside even the schools now. There's no isolated – they're happening in urban schools, rural schools, city schools, all-white, all-black schools. I mean, it's
– But the common factor, I believe, mm-hmm. and they won't open it up,
mm-mm.
but the common factor is lack of unity within a family.
It could be they're not that would be hard to isolate.
You cannot isolate that because no one's going to say, because when something like this happens, we're all one.
Think about how much the world has changed. And we have not, I mean, we had, you know, fights for equal rights, feminist movements. I mean, women are in the workforce. Women are parents. Mom's not at home cooking, cleaning, and taking care of the kid while dad goes out and earns a living and comes home. I mean, I don't know if that was the right or the wrong way, but everybody's got so much on their plate that I don't think any of us have learned how to truly balance. There is no balance. No, the world has – there's financial pressures. There's nutritional needs. I mean, there is so much on people's plates. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we definitely live in a more of a complicated, complex world than what we used to. But I agree as well, too. You know, my own personal opinion, I think a lot of it has to come down with, as what Tracy said, it has to do with unity in the home and with the foundation of how you're being reared, how you're being raised. And a lot of the parents have lost that as well. So when the parents don't have the foundation, the children aren't getting the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there isn't one aspect or anything, just like disease, you know, to cancer. There isn't just one aspect, or there's many. You know, it's nutrition, it's toxins in the environment, it's genes, it's many factors. Same mm-hmm. thing with mental health. You know, the foundation of the family, and then you have to look at the nutritional aspect, the environmental factors,
mm-hmm.
peer pressure, and it's a combination of all those, I feel.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, but in reality, there is no like basic criteria on how you raise your family. Like you said, everybody does it differently.
But there's no basic criteria. But let me ask you this: respect in the home and hierarchy in the home, having mom and dad, and spending quality time and making your family by priority is not a bad thing. And if you look at what's happening in our society today, family is not priority. Family is obligation.
That's value.
Well,
I remember growing up, it was God, family, work.
What you saying, Brandy?
Growing up in my home, it was God, family, work.
Right.
I mean, I can't take those values and impose them on everybody's life, but certainly that was the world I grew up in and the world that the families around me grew up in, because it was like back in
it
the day.
It was God, family, work.
My parents knew my friends' parents. But it is, I mean, it is sometimes work. Sometimes families aren't a priority, but I don't want to necessarily blame the parents, because I think indirectly they are a priority sometimes. When you're out working three jobs because you need to put food on the table for your kids, your ultimate goal is your kids, but you're not home with your kids. You're not spending time with your kids. You know, you're working at the grocery store, then going to the bank after, you know, to work there and put some, just to make.
But when you look at the mass shootings that are happening,
mm-hmm.
they're not happening in urban settings with single family homes.
They're happening across the board.
But they're not happening in the urban settings. You don't see the mass killings. No, there's violence inside the urban settings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's violence outside outside the schools in urban settings. But when you look at the mass killings and the mass shootings, these are not happening to your urban, you know, impoverished kids.
No. I mean, one of the most recent was at a Christian college.
That's what I'm saying. These are happening for more of your middle class suburban children, which is totally different.
You
can't blame the poor for the violence anymore. Violence is spreading out everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But with the violence spreading everywhere, it's a different kind of violence, where in the inner city, it's one-on-one, it's black-on-black crime, it's drug-induced, it's all that kind of things. In the suburban area, these kids are flipping out and just killing up everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They just go, meet the numbers.
How are the kids getting access to all these guns? Should the parents be held accountable for that also?
Everyone's always had access to guns. I remember when my mom had her gun when she was young, when I was a kid, and my uncles had the rifles on the gun rack. We just were disciplined enough we weren't allowed to touch them.
Yeah, but I think that's
different. Whoa. One at a time. Go ahead, Eric.
Like I said, when I was growing up as a kid, between my dad, my grandfather, and my uncles, I had enough guns to run an army. But I never thought twice about picking them up and taking it to school.
We weren't allowed to use them.
Yep.
But you know that research has proven that you're more likely – a gun in your home that's not locked up and the bullets aren't held elsewhere, even if for safety purposes, you are more likely to hurt a member of your family or a loved one with that arm – with that then. So I have trouble understanding people who still continue to – keep their firearms loaded and somewhere for safety when the chances are it's going to hurt somebody that you love or care about.
But actually, when I was growing up, they didn't have them loaded. They just had them there. I don't know if they were loaded or not. But as far as it takes a lot to go and pick up a – you have to really hate yourself to pick up a firearm. The last couple of young people, they use knives. That's personal.
Yeah.
My question is, do you think that the kids should be held accountable?
I mean, there's times that these kids come from families with idealistic families. I mean, so it's hard to – I would have trouble just blaming parents for something like this when – I mean, you could – some parents try everything and their children still act out in violence.
Well, that's true. You necessarily can't blame the parent. I've always said that any child – under the age of 10, it's the parents' responsibility. Anything over the age of 10 and 12, you know, age of accountability, it's the person's fault, the child's fault. But I think that parenting, you know, in a society at large, we no longer praise
this is an important
the family. We no longer it no longer has any. It doesn't mean anything. Hey, listen, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. Dr. Brandy has to leave, I know. Thank you for coming in,
Thank
Dr. Brandy.
Yeah, I enjoyed the conversation.
Dr. Mason's still here. I'm going to see if I can rope him into staying and talking to Dr. Hurt. We'll be right back. Again, the number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of my break.
What's another thing,
Hello.
Hello.
Minty, did you have your baby?
Hart.
Yeah, I had him June 5th. It's the day.
Congratulations.
That same day I had it. I had the baby that same night at 9:40 p.m.
Oh, the day that we were talking, I was like, "You about to have him? You gonna have him tonight?"
I had him that night.
Oh, okay.
How
long were you in labor for?
I got there at 5. Well, you know, really, I was in labor really till what was it? That was early in the morning. I was chatting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What happened is my water had broke, and I didn't even realize it. You know.
How you not realize?
No, because it broke a little. It never did that before. Came out a little. Even when I was talking to you, it came, and I didn't really know what was going on. I was just thinking, okay, you know. And then it really broke. And when I was on my way to the hospital, I had to call an ambulance to come get me.
Oh, wow.
Hello?
Yep, so.
This
yep.
is Dr. Hart. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Hart.
I'm on the line.
Okay. Tracy's on break right now.
Yeah, Tracy's on, yeah. So, you know, I had the baby, and I'm cursing everybody out, but I had the baby. Yeah, because the epidural went down. So I had like a natural birth. And when the epidural went down, I tried to tell the lady to give me another shot. And she kept coming out the room. She didn't answer the calls. And she kept telling, like, the way she was talking to me was just not appropriate. And I went off of her. I was like, why are you running your mouth? Do what I say. Give you an epidural shot. I never had so much mouth and problems. I went off. But once I was, the doctor was like doing something to try to help me deliver the baby. That was making it worse. I didn't want her touching me. But when they pulled me into the other room, I was able to deliver naturally because I was pushing as they was taking me to the room, and baby came right out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, when I did it by myself, it was so much better. When I pushed by myself, no nothing, it was so much better. I didn't see no one touching me. Yep, but that was an experience. That was really an experience.
If you don't mind me asking, where is your mother at now? Do you talk to her at all?
No. My mother's in North Carolina. That's where I'm from. I mean, I told her the baby was born, but that's it. I didn't. That was no further conversation than that.
Is she trying to connect with you, or?
Oh.
It wouldn't matter to me what she's trying to do. Mother, it's not. Her connection is not coming from a place of love. It's coming from a place of wanting to look some kind of way. So I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm actually. I dialed the 347 number.
Okay, so you're saying that it's not coming from a good place.
Yeah,
it's not. It's about looks to her. You know, when she comes up here, coming to see my grandchildren and blah blah blah. It's just looks. It's just so people won't come at her. People won't have ammo for her with the family.
She's trying to
about my kids. You know,
So basically, she's trying to put on a front like she's this great mother and great grandmother.
You know, she asks she tried her stuff asking, if I need her help. And I told her, I don't need you. You know, I'm done. Like, I told you the baby was born. There's nothing more for us to talk about. I didn't need you for 30 years. I was 19, and I don't need you now. You know, so it's, yeah.
But see, even in you dealing with the situation you dealt with, I say mental illness is not so dry. Because you can have a person who has gone through your situation a stronger from.
Who's all that noise? I can't hear you, Diva. What did you say?
I said mental illness is not so cut and dry because you can have someone who comes from a dysfunctional background. You can have someone who comes from what you would see as the ideally perfect home life.
But my situation was I started seeing things when I became more of an adult. Because, when you're young, you don't really see. You don't really know. But when I became a woman and having my own family and stuff, and don't get me wrong, my children's father will always bring things up to me and about my parents and stuff in a very nice way. But I had to start seeing stuff for myself. I had to go start seeing stuff for myself. And,
did you ever have to seek psychological help?
I really was. But honestly, when I just started looking into myself and looking into my life more, that's how I started healing myself, honestly, on my own. I just started shifting myself consciously. Because I was going to go to a psychiatrist. I still think about it. But what was the process for me was a summer ago when I was down there, and I just analyzed her. I just analyzed her. I analyzed my family. And when I did that, that was my wake-up call. And after that, I had changed tremendously. And then that's when it came to a point to where I was like, you know what, I just cut my mother off, but I just don't talk about it. Because I saw the same thing that I grew up seeing, but I'm wise enough to really see it. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's good.
So my issue with my mother is not just me. You know, I have cousins that don't talk to her. I have, you know, it's not just me.
I don't know what it is about my mother. I guess because in my mother, I see a lot of hurt. I couldn't see when I was younger. Because like when I was younger, I hated my mother. I used to sit and wish she would just die. And I know that's so sad to think. But, man, now as an adult, I can see, you know, she was, and I'm not trying to excuse it, but she was young. She didn't know how to handle raising children. And plus, she just grew up very spoiled and selfish. Like, she grew up with everyone taking care of her emotionally, catering to her emotionally and physically. So now she had all these three kids who needed her. Mm-hmm. And she didn't know how to deal with that.
Hey,
that's what allowed me to really build a relationship with my mom. Because I never thought me and my mom. My mom used to always say, I'm going to be your mom is your best friend. I'd be like, yeah, right.
Hey ladies.
Hey, y'all, what's up?
Can y'all hear me? I just want to say to both of you, D-Man and Minty, I'm sorry y'all had to go through that. I really am, because my mom wasn't like that. She was very nurturing. She was very loving. She had any questions I asked. I mean, I was the kid, the 2-year-old, that asked, what is it? What's it? Why? What's this? Why? What's this? Why? And she always answered my questions. She never lost her patience with me. And
But you gotta understand something else, too. You're a man.
1-800-530-WSOM. That's 347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hello.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. It's 8 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock here on the 12th of June, 2014. Dr. Mason is still in studio with me. I'm glad he's hanging out with me today. And I've got a lot of people in the room, but I am going to back up, and I'm going to get everybody off because Dr. Carl Hart is with me. And I'm going to ask him to tell his own story. It's pretty amazing. He has a book out called High Price. It's a neuroscientist's journey of self-discovery that challenges everything you know about drugs and society. Dr. Hart, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for accepting my invite and looking forward to talking with you because you put a different spin on some things that people don't want to say out loud.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You go ahead.
I want you to introduce yourself. Talk a little bit about you before you go and jump into your book, because we've got a little while as long as you do.
Well, as you kind of pointed out, I've been studying drugs for the past 25 years, but I grew up in the hood, came from the projects, used drugs, sold drugs, engaged in petty crime, did all those sorts of things. but yet went on to become the first tenured African-American scientist at Columbia University. When I say those kind of things, I just want people to understand that I don't mean them in those dichotomous terms that people usually talk about. Like, so I was this, now I'm that. That ain't the case. I'm still hood. I'm still all those kinds of things, but it's just that I've learned how to manipulate the English language such that mainstream America is not afraid of me, but I am still hood.
No, what is, no, you're not.
I am.
Just,
I mean,
you just keep it real.
Yeah, I mean, but I just want people to understand. See, one of the things that happens in America is that when you have black people who make it or somebody like me, then people kind of act as if they are exceptions, and they act as if they are no longer all of those things that they were. All of the things that I was helped me to be the person I am today, so that I am conscious about the sort of injustices that are going on right now that disproportionately negatively affect black people in this country. So I just want people to understand that I am no exception, and there were smarter people than me in the hood who didn't make it out for various reasons that we can do something about in this society if we actually cared. So I just have to make that clear, because people hear my story, then they say, see, there it is. If they just clean up their life and get themselves right, they can do like that. Nope, that's not that. That's not this story.
So tell us a little bit about your story, since we don't know who Dr. Carl Hart is. Tell us a little bit how you became from where you've been to where you are today. Because a neuroscientist, I mean, that's a little journey.
Yeah. So as I said, how I grew up in Miami in the 70s and 80s primarily, and poor neighborhoods and. The thing that kind of kept me plugged into mainstream, there were a number of things. There were, for example, governmental programs. My family was on aid to family with dependent children, welfare as we knew it before Clinton got rid of the program. There were other programs that Ronald Reagan made sure that we gutted. They were summer programs that allowed poor kids like me to earn money in the summer. They're gone. But those programs were attacked because people said things like that we had these welfare queens, but it's just simply an exaggeration. Like, I have 7 siblings, and all of us are taxpaying citizens today, and we paid a hell of a lot more taxes than we actually got from those type of programs. And so those programs are no longer there. The high school athletics kept me plugged in. I played basketball throughout high school, and I was required to maintain at least a 2.0 grade point average, and that allowed me to graduate. I mean, it wasn't high, but it certainly allowed me to graduate. After that, I had 5 older sisters who were essentially surrogate mothers, and they also were strong, kept me plugged in. I had a doting grandmother who was also strong, kept me plugged in. After high school, however, I didn't get the basketball scholarship that I thought I was going to get, so I enrolled into the Air Force, and I spent most of my time over in England. I spent 4 years in the Air Force, and 3 of those years were in England. And in England, it was kind of an awakening, if you will, because the British were not bashful at criticizing America for its racial discrimination. There were programs on their television, TV, like the U.S. series, The Eyes on the Prize, about the civil rights movements, a number of programs, and they were not bashful about criticizing us for our racism. And that kind of discourse didn't happen in mainstream America when I was coming up. And so you were led to believe that something was wrong with you. But in England, my reality was kind of corroborated, although the British were not too quick to criticize themselves about their own racism. But that's a whole other story. But for me, it was beneficial being overseas in England during that time, in the mid-1980s. And that just kind of intensified my desire, or helped me to develop a desire to want to make a contribution to my community. And at the time, crack cocaine was said to be destroying the black community. And so I thought I'd go to school, get a degree, and be able to make a contribution in that way. So I started studying drugs, and I started studying the neurobiology of drugs, and so neuroscience. I wanted to understand how nerve cells or brain cells responded to cocaine such that people became addicted, and that's what I did. I went on to get out a PhD in that study, and along the way I discovered some things that challenged my thinking and discovered some things that told me that I was wrong in terms of what I thought, how crack was destroying the community. It wasn't crack at all. It was poverty. It was unemployment. It was some governmental programs or government neglect. But yet crack was blamed for all these things. And so I write about this in the book, and I try and explain to people how to separate fact from fiction, what's real from what people say is real. And so that's kind of what the book is about. And I take them on this journey throughout my life, and I use my life as a sort of a vehicle to pull the thread through my life, my science, and now my public policy perspective.
So tell us, how do you think that, because I look at drugs, I look at it, you know, and I take a bit different approach from you, but I started my life out, you know, it wasn't in the street, but I was doing everything the street people do. I was hanging out there doing drugs, kicking it, and to get me here, and I use it as my platform and a foundation, so I don't forget where I came from. But I wasn't impoverished. I think I was just going, we talked about bullying a little bit earlier and being left out and not fitting in, and dealing with the environment and dealing with the people, the society that's around me, and getting plugged in, because when I was high, I didn't care. And so I look at drugs, yes, it has a poverty niche, but it also has a niche of lack of self-esteem, and a lot to do with self-esteem. So help me out with this, and how does your book address some of these issues?
Well, so what you just described is your sort of unique sort of experience. Now, let's just consider this. 80 to 90% of the people who use drugs don't have a problem with drugs. They go to work, they pay their taxes, they take care of their children, and some of them even become president of the United States. All three of the last presidents that we've had, the last three presidents we've had, they all reported illicit or illegal drug use when they were young men. That's the typical experience of a drug user. What you described is not a typical experience of the drug user. What you described is a sort of pathological experience of the drug users. And then when we think about the pathological experience of drug users, they are pathological for a variety of reasons, and many of them don't have anything to do with the drug themselves. So like if people have co-occurring psychiatric illnesses, anxiety, learning disorder, depression, schizophrenia, you name it, all of those kinds of things contribute to those kind of experiences that you described. And then other people have reasons that they have pathological experiences because they have no alternatives. They have no better option, and this is the best option that they have. Other people just didn't learn the skills necessary to temper their behavior in any domain. So when we think about drugs, drugs are often blamed for what's already there, and if we deal with what's already there, you don't have the drug problem.
So when you look at, so you believe that if we rid ourselves from poverty, we will rid ourselves from a drug problem in the inner city?
I think that if we rid ourselves of poverty, we rid ourselves from not only drug problems, crime, a wide range of things, apathy, mental illness, a wide range of things. But I want to be clear, poverty isn't the only reason that people abuse or are addicted to drugs. There are other things, as I was saying, like co-occurring psychiatric illnesses. Those are also important. But poverty is a huge sort of factor in this, and it's a factor that people in the United States don't really get. As I've been traveling with this book, I've been to Brazil recently, Oslo, Norway recently, Paris. I've been all around the world with this book. And as I think about our society, and as I think about how we think about taking care of people in our society, we are, frankly, uncivilized. We don't take care of our people. In fact, it's okay for politicians to say that we're not taking care of people. That is remarkable to me. And it's okay for them to call themselves Christians. I mean, we are, I always, as a Christian, as someone who was brought up in the church, I thought we took care of the least among us. And that's not what we do in this society. That's what they do in Europe. That's what they do all around the world. They take care of people in their society. If we did that, we would deal with so many problems that our society faced. But it's our right to say those people we're not taking care of. That's
now,
just
uncivilized. When you say that, when you say those people that we don't take care of, who should be taking care of these people? Because earlier we talked about parenting. And if you want to bring the church equation into this, the church doesn't take care of people if you want to know the truth about it. So, you know, I'm going to separate the Christian from the church, the organization, the buildings that we have. We've got all these temples made unto men, but the church does not help people.
No,
and so we go and
don't
so
please don't
you,
make me defend
you,
the church.
Hold on, because you got the wrong one. Because if you go to the politician, I'm not looking for the government to take care of me.
Hold up.
I have a child.
Thank you. Perfect. That's perfect. Okay, so like, you pay taxes, I pay taxes, right?
Absolutely.
And we pay taxes so we can make sure that all of our citizens have a certain level of
Not why I pay taxes. That's not why I pay taxes. I pay taxes so that we have an infrastructure so that we can build, so that I can have the fundamental right to give and to take care of other people as well as my family.
This is an American sort of warped way of thinking, because the bottom line, if you don't take care of people, poor people, you're not going to have what you just said you want to have.
States will be able to apply for grants from...
Poor people will always be poor unless you change their mindset. And we have not dealt with the education of poverty. See,
yeah, that's
the problem,
right.
With poverty
is
a miseducation of people who are impoverished.
Yeah, no, education, I'm with you. I'm an educator. I'm a college professor. So absolutely, education is important. But you have to make sure that people get educated. You have to make sure that people are, first of all, physically healthy so that they eat, so that they're taken care of, so that when they come to the classroom.
No, wait a minute. Hold on, Doc. How long do I have you scheduled for? How long can you stay? I'm here until 12 noon.
With you, I'm here. I'm with you.
Okay, now listen here. Listen here. They tell me that the children can't read by the third grade. And so we build prisons based upon the reading level of the third grade.
Sure.
And if you don't learn how to read, you can't read to learn. Am I correct?
That one with you.
So now you tell me that poverty, but now in my community, because I still live in the inner city, so I have not moved to the suburbs yet. I still live in the hood.
Okay, right on.
Okay, and the misalignment of our priorities when it comes to our financial distribution is highly disproportionate. Even if we are impoverished, we tend to put our priorities on things that we shouldn't put them in and not on food in our belly. Because I had doctors on earlier today, we talked about what we eat. And so instead of me cooking a meal and us having leftovers for a week, like Grandma did when we had no money,
okay.
We eat at McDonald's. We spend our money foolishly, yet I drive something that I can't afford and/or I dress in clothes that I shouldn't afford because I've got Calvin Klein. Michael Kors that I'm carrying my broke money in and a wig on my head because I won't take care of my hair.
Right on. I'm with you. You know, I know all of that ratchetness. I know all of that. So let's talk about the food, the McDonald's and that sort of thing. First of all, so when we think about food, in order to eat well in this country, it costs some money for the most part. If you're going to get fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, that sort of thing. McDonald's is a lot cheaper. So when people have limited resources.
No. McDonald's is not cheaper than beans and oatmeal.
Well, you know.
No. I still cook greens. I can go get me a pot of greens with a ham hock, and it can go a long way.
That is good for you. Now that's fine for you, but the point is that everybody doesn't know how to do that. Not only that, everybody doesn't have the knowledge that
whose fault is that?
Hold on. Look, I heard you. Hear me out. So.
All right.
Everybody doesn't have the knowledge that McDonald's is not the most healthy meal that one should eat. So therefore, there is a need to make sure we teach people that, okay, these are the ways that you can eat healthy and eat at a reasonable sort of rate or money. You don't have to spend your entire check on eating organic foods. And so, but that they need to be taught that. People need to be taught that. That certainly isn't taught in our country.
I'm here in our community. And I'm talking about just the black community, so we're going to just narrow this down.
That's cool.
Macaroni and cheese is not an expensive meal.
Now, you're talking about macaroni with the noodles that are like white pasta noodles? That's not the healthiest thing. And then
cheese? I'm talking about wheat noodles, them wheat noodles.
Right on.
Because we got all these in bottom dollar, you can go a little farther. And, yes, we need to teach it. But the lack of parenting. But, ooh.
I don't know what's going on.
I'd like to hear the rest of it.
Tracy.
Hold on, South Carolina. When we actually look at this, and we look at when you're getting food stamps in excess of, I think, $70, $80 per person in your household, and there's a lot of people who misalign those monies and misallocate those monies when they go in the grocery store because they're buying soda pop, which is not good.
That's right.
And we still allow it. So teaching this?
Tracy, you and I, we agree on the fact that people shouldn't be eating that stuff, right? I agree with you. But what I'm saying is that one of the things that we do in this country is that we tend to blame poor people when the cards are so stacked against them. And if we just simply teach people basic lessons, we can improve their lives and improve our country. That's
what
I'm saying.
But we don't want to teach them. The government does not want to teach them.
You and I agree. Absolutely. That's exactly what my book is about, how the government has misled the country. And when they mislead the country, the poor people pay the price. That's precisely what I'm saying.
We depend upon the government.
Well, we pay taxes, so therefore...
Hang on.
They do pay taxes. They contribute. I mean, my mom was on welfare, and she was working as well. There are people who are on welfare, and they pay taxes, and they're making their contribution. So if you make your contribution, you actually deserve something from your government.
But your federal tax, if you make less than a certain amount of money, you get all your tax. It's like their new savings account. We got more car dealerships that pop up here on tax return time than ever before because all that money comes back. When we talk about poverty and we talk about, what's wrong with our community and we look to the government, because the problem with our community is they're looking for the government to save them.
Nah, that's not true. I mean, that's some stuff that the Republicans say and those people say because it's easy. It's really easy to attack poor people. When I think about all the money that the money that the people on Wall Street and all these wealthy people have taken from the government, from our taxes, and we spend our time blaming the poor people.
But the problem is, we keep on putting a party label with this. And what I'm telling you is those people on Wall Street are not necessarily Republicans. But yet we align ourselves
with a party. I agree.
98% of this party. We align ourselves with these parties, and we think that they love us. The other people ignore us, and then we wonder why we're not getting anything, yet you can't read by the third grade, and so no one is getting a better education so they can work themselves out of poverty. Go ahead, South Carolina, and then I'm going to let
Paul
back
well
in.
Well taken. Point well taken about the parties. I agree.
But Tracy, I mean, I'm listening to what he just said, but I've seen it with my own eyes where people – who receive assistance, they go out, they work all the year. At the end of the year, they get everything back that they put in, plus the earned income tax credit, plus the additional child care credit, they get it. So that basically everything they put in, they're getting, in some cases, twice the amount that they put in, plus they're giving assistance. And other benefits that they're giving, government housing vouchers and things such as that, and you're getting this assistance, and nothing has changed. Nothing changes from year to year. There have been everything is kind of flat now. You don't see any advances, any increases, or anything like that. I don't get this. And we're saying we're blaming it on poor people. Well, poor people are responsible pretty much for their situation.
Oh, my God.
I, I'm, you know,
They are pretty much responsible. If you if you're getting four or five hundred dollars in food stamps and you don't budget that wisely and give your children quality food with all the health and nutrition programs out there that are offered, number one in school, number two by agencies like community health agencies and community action agencies, the programs that have Head Start, First Steps in the state of South Carolina, these programs offer programs to teach healthy eating and teach healthy foods, and they don't take advantage of it.
Okay, Tracy. I don't know how long I can do this because I'm not really qualified to sit here and bash poor people, particularly when I know wealthy people are getting over in this country. That's why we had a sort of we've had this focus on this 1% in the country. So I can't do this. I'm sorry. I was prepared to talk about my book, but I can't do this.
We want you to talk about your book, but the issue is when you brought it into the equation, and we're not blaming. This is not. I'm not saying this is the fault of poor people and or the fault of rich people. But I can actually say this. It is the decision making of the society in which we live, which is promoting bad decision making, and we're putting taking more responsibility off the people, putting it onto the government, and not allowing them to stand up on their own two feet. And so when I look at drugs come into the community, and we have access to them, we can afford them, but we can't afford the education to pull us out. And when I look at my young brothers who are on the street selling drugs, they are some of the most highly intellectual people that I know. But we did not give them the education that they needed. And they call themselves impoverished, but it is our responsibility to start teaching the responsibility of what they're doing. You cannot go out there and make as much money as they are, even in the illegal drug trade. And have as many children as they have and don't take care of them.
They're not making money. That's a myth that they're making a lot of money. They're making about the same as they would be making at McDonald's.
They're not working for that money. Someone is giving it to them, and that's a big difference.
They are working. You're on the corner and you're selling drugs. You got to avoid the police. You got to do a number of things. That is work. We call that work. It's illegal work. There are a number of people in this country, for example, who built empires on illegal activity, and now they are respectable people. But believe me, it's work. And somebody who says it's not work is deluded.
I say that it's work, but I will say that they're making more than McDonald's. The problem is they don't know what to do with what they get, no matter what. And it again goes back to education. Poor people are breeding poor people because of the choices that they make, and because of that, as a government. Going back to what we're saying, and I want you to dig deeper into your book, what I say is the government, the society at large, is making it to where they want us to be government-dependent and not self-dependent. And that's a problem.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all. In fact, the way they have been slashing all of these programs for the poor, I don't think there's anyone who wants us to be government dependent. I think there are people who might not want people to think, but government dependent, I certainly don't think there's a move in the country for that.
My God, Tracy.
Yes, go ahead, Jeff.
I want to hear what he has to say about the he was starting to talk about the programs and the social programs. They've been cut, but I want to find out what you think that those things do for you.
What do the social programs do?
Yeah,
for example, there were a number of us who are successful today and taxpaying citizens who were on welfare as children throughout our childhood. Those programs helped to make sure that we were physically healthy, intellectually able to engage, all of those kinds of things, make sure that we had a certain level of standard of care, all of those things.
Okay, now, so my point is this. So when do we... what's the percentage that you think are the people that break away from that? Because I don't see a whole lot of it.
I know you don't see a whole lot of it, but the evidence is that the vast majority of people who were on welfare, for example, they spent about 7 years, these family, about 7 years on welfare, and then they got off and became productive members in this society. It's just that people are embarrassed to say that they were on welfare. But the evidence, it's clear. The majority of the people who've been on welfare are taxpaying citizens, contributing to the tax base.
That would be good to know, and I appreciate you saying that, because I have not seen that statistic, but I'm not going to deny it either, because I don't know. But this is what I'd like to ask. If that's the case, why is it that that capital, why is it that continuation of poverty all the time follows one community exponentially, seeing that almost 70% of our children are born in poverty in America?
So that's a good question. It's a good question. So when, you know, in the book I try to explain the things that we see in the black community today, since that's what we're talking about, like the things that concern all of us on this call, all of us, all of those awful things, if you look at history in the United States, look at the various groups who came over, let's just take the Jews, the Eastern European Jews, when they came over to the Lower East Side, they had all of the same problems that we are talking about that face black people, all of the same problems. Men leaving wives, families torn apart, all of these sorts of things. And then eventually they were allowed to integrate into American society. In effect, they were allowed to be white in America. Black people have not been allowed to be white, in part because of this conspicuous characteristic, race. And race plays a major role in making sure that people, some people are shut out and others are not.
Diva, your mic is on.
All I got to say is, quit beating up on your guests.
I ain't beating up on the guests.
Talk.
The guests, I know, because he's liberal.
Like, I didn't know he was liberal.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Well, I found out later after I started beating up on him, then I'm like, oh, he must be a liberal.
No, Tracy's good.
But what I'm saying is, I like to hear it is everything that I've been saying, Stanley's been saying, liberals are saying, you guys look at us. This is just me. I say, you guys look at us and look, okay, you're not educated. You really don't know what you're talking about. But here is an educated brother who came from the same circumstances that most of us have, and he has made something of himself. He has a wealth of knowledge in his brain, and he's saying the same things, and you guys are still shutting him down and not trying to hear what he is saying.
But, Diva, what I'm saying to you is, if you look at the systemic problem within the black community when it comes to people that are on welfare, we're not knocking the people that are on welfare, so it is not their fault. But we are showing you a pattern where the society at large is keeping people impoverished so that they can control people. They don't want you off welfare. They don't want you off the system. And even if you are contributing, very, very few people become neuroscientists.
That's not true, because with welfare reform, it used to be, prior to 1992, prior to welfare reform, it used to be the system was like that. You couldn't work, you couldn't do anything. You had to accept the system and stay on it, or if you worked, then you had to give up all your benefits. That's not the case. Now the system allows you to work. But what you guys are failing to realize is the people who receive assistance, they work. They work hard. They get the tax money.
And they systemically and ongoingly stay in a liberal mindset and not an independent mindset. Because, you know, I'm still not telling anyone to become a Republican. But when you vote 98% overwhelmingly one way, no matter what the race is, starting from the school board all the way up to the president of the United States, and you live in a society where your schools are still at the bottom, you are dealing with a problem that no one wants to deal with.
Tracy, so you recall, like 1996, when welfare was gotten rid of, there was a liberal Democrat in the White House who signed that, right?
And remember who put the program together?
Nixon.
Again, who pushed
no,
for that program.
The program was put together. It was a bipartisan program between the Republican Congress and Clinton, who was the president. That's how it got there.
Right.
The same thing was with NAFTA and GATT. The same thing was with the balancing of the budget. Clinton learned how to cross the line. That's something that's not happening in Washington today.
No. What I'm saying is that, you know, like I certainly don't consider myself a liberal, and I certainly don't consider myself like supporting of the Democrats or any one party. My point is that I have a critique for the liberal Democrats like Clinton. And I am saying that he did the wrong thing as a Democrat. That's what I'm saying. So I just
Why are you saying he did the wrong thing?
Because he should not have gutted welfare. And what he did with that crime bill is, let me just give you one example. For example, this is what was in that bill, one of the things that related to my area, that anybody who was convicted of a drug felony could no longer receive government assistance, even after they paid their time in jail or whatever. But if you murdered someone, raped someone, you did your time in jail, you can come out and get government assistance.
Okay.
That's the kind of silly thing that was in that bill.
And but let me ask you this. I agree we need to have a common sense approach to this. But when I look at how we do things when it comes to poverty, when it comes to our political, we are also so one-sided. They're using our poverty and our ignorance against us.
Okay.
And we won't stand up and begin to lobby on their behalf because they don't have the lobbyists and the lawyers to get what they need. And
but
so
I'm
they
trying.
Ignore one and they fall in love with another. So you may – and I did not know that. I did not realize that. But
yeah,
it's
well,
the same thing with the same thing with not being in the state of Ohio. We have a governor who decided to take the ban off of convicted felons and felons being able to drive a truck. That just didn't make sense. Or to be a barber, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And changing it to where they can come out and they can actually become producing citizens.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you look at welfare, welfare needs to be reshaped again. But so do the other programs. Because they're not productive. They don't help you off. They help you on.
Well, Trace, you know, one of the things I'm trying to do is help educate our folks. And I'm trying to make sure that they understand how they're getting hoodwinked. But as a country, it is our responsibility to take care of the least among us. That's what I believe. And if it were not for that belief and then people didn't take care of me, I would not be a taxpaying citizen today trying to make a contribution to my country. And there are a number of people out there who will do the same thing if we
but
gave
them
a
this.
Shot.
But let me ask you, why is it that if that be the case, then why is it when we talk about being philanthropic and taking care of the least, why is it that our historically black colleges are not funded by those of us who go to school there?
I can't answer that question. I'm not an alum of those places, but you know.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I mean, when you say that, if you look at how much money we spend in building churches, millions of dollars. Why is I'm serious? And we sit inside of communities, and everything. They said they're celebrating 100 years, and everything around it is dead. I'm so confused by that.
Wait, now you got the wrong person defending churches. Now, that's not what I do. You know, I was brought up in a church, but, you know, this whole notion of believing in something that you can't prove, that's kind of bizarre to me as a scientist. So I'm not the person that should be defending churches.
But I'm just saying, overwhelming, whether it be an organization and or a church. Where is it that when we go out, and I think you have a chapter in your book talking about rap and hip-hop.
Yeah, that's right. I came up in that era. That's right.
So tell me, why is it that when we make the money that we make, we don't come back and pour the money back into our community?
You know, you're asking me to. There are some people who do make contributions.
You the scientist. No, we don't do it collectively because, see, I'm not going to tie my money to yours so that we can build an empire.
Tracy,
I make a shrine under myself.
You are asking me questions beyond my expertise.
Listen, you are the neuroscientist. I'm trying to tell you, you're the brightest one in the room. I know this to be true. You should have the answer. You wrote a book, and you're a good-looking brother. I ain't mad at you. You teach where? At Columbia University. Absolutely. Do you know what Columbia is? I don't even know where that is on the map. I can't even afford to spell Columbia. Do you understand what I'm talking about? We got a high price to pay, and we're looking for the government to take care of us when we won't take care of our own.
Tracy, can I ask a question?
Sure, Jeff.
Okay, Dr. Hart, would you not think this particular thing right now, that the more that we as a people can become independent financially, independent politically, that puts us in a better place of power? Because as you said, the Jews made their way through and were allowed to be white in America. I think that they forced their way to be to get that privilege by their economics. That's my personal belief, because their economic system is the same no matter where they go in the world. And they take it over, just like you see the Arabs and Asians here. That's the thing that we're looking at. So would you not say that that's the case?
I think finances are critically important, as you pointed out, but one of the things that, when we think about the Jewish example, one of the things that they did was they got rid of their sort of a garb that made them look different. In many cases, they stopped wearing the garb that identified them. They changed their names in some cases. And so they were able to just kind of become white. But they still maintained some religion, their religion, but in a more less conspicuous manner. And then they interact with each other, and they tried to build their community in that way. So they were able to kind of be under the radar, if you will. And that's something that is a little more difficult for black people to do.
I'm going to pick up, because you can't answer that question, but the question is why? Local call, your mic is on. Okay. Who else is out there? 269, your mic is on.
Hey, how you doing, Trish?
Good, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. One second. Go ahead to somebody else. I got to do something.
Okay. Stanley, your mic is on.
I wanted to ask him a question, Tracy.
Go ahead, Aminty.
Can we go back to the drugs, doctor? I'm curious about weed. And I noticed that in other cultures, such as Caribbean culture, Spanish, they say that here in America the weed is very different from where the weed in their country. So I wanted to know what's really going on with this weed, these different type of weeds that's going on out here, purple, loud, and these different things, and what's really in them. I personally am not about that life. I don't smoke, but I know others who do. But I'm just curious about what's really going on with it, and is it really a part of harming our people? And people is anyone.
So when we talk about weed, the major thing that people are talking about that changes is the THC, the amount of THC in the weed. The THC is the major thing that kind of gets people high. That ranges from 1% to all the way up to like 99% THC, so very, really weak to really strong. And that is the same all around the world. So when people talk about the weed here being different from the weed somewhere else, that's just simply not true. The types of weed that are here are available all around the world. And so obviously when we think about any psychoactive drug, which marijuana is, it certainly has the potential to be dangerous, just like driving an automobile has the potential to be dangerous. But you take steps to make sure people stay safe. In part, what the book tries to do is try and help people understand the steps that they can take to be safe if they indulge. And so I hope that answers your question.
What do you think about the legalization of it?
The legalization that we have in Colorado and Washington, that's an interesting thing. So I think that it really doesn't matter what I think. I think that, sure, there's a case to be made for it to be legal, and Colorado and Washington has already done that. But whether or not it spreads to other states will depend on how much money those people keep reporting out of Colorado and Washington. If they continue to report huge amounts of profits, it's going to be spread to other states, because ultimately we are a capitalist society.
But how is that going to impact the poverty and or the community at large
It won't impact the poverty in the community at large as much as the mass incarceration has already impacted it. The mass incarceration has gotten rid of generations of black men. This sort of the legalization won't have nowhere near that kind of impact.
And, doctor, I wanted to also ask about crack cocaine, heroin. I have a few family members that have fell into that life and also been caught and interested and also have done time in jail as well as doing that. And I'm curious, too, what is it in these drugs that creates this addiction
to the point where it just, they're just somewhere and something else.
Well, I don't know if there's anything in the drug per se that creates these addictions, because when you find that 80-90% of the people who use these drugs are not addicts, they're just a small percentage who become addicted, there are other things that create the addiction. And we kind of talked about those things earlier. Some people have psychiatric illnesses that need to be treated, and in part that's what they're doing with some of these drugs, self-medicating. Other people have lack of opportunities, lack of skill sets. A wide range of things are responsible for having people be addicted. But one must have a careful analysis or assessment of the person who is addicted, really understand what's going on in that person's environment, what's going on with that person. If we understand those sorts of things, then we could help that person who's addicted.
And real quick, I'm so glad you said that, because I realize people who go through a family of people who are drug addicts real bad also have family members who are very neurotic. And I know that's what my personal case is. Family members are very neurotic. And like I said, as far as going to jail and all that stuff, don't know how to humble themselves. So, yes, I'm so glad you said that, because I also see that. I don't believe that it's the
Hold
drug.
On. I meant it. Hold on. Yeah, no comment. I got to go to the next one. Hey, Eric, go ahead. Your mic is on. South Carolina? Okay. Go ahead back in. I just want to make sure everybody got in. Dr. Carl, tell us your website and tell us where they can buy your book everywhere books are sold.
Yeah, the website is one word, highpricedthebook.com. Highpricedthebook.com.
What do you want people to take away from this book?
What I want people to take away from the book is that I want them to understand that they've got hoodwinked. They were manipulated in believing that, like crack cocaine, for example, was the reason that black people were doing so poorly in this country, and just simply not true. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
I interrupted. Oh, okay. I also want them to understand that science is supposed to be an objective endeavor, but it's carried out primarily by white men, and there is little diversity in science, and the issues that we focus on are not necessarily the ones that we would have them focus on if we are coming from communities of color. So people need to understand that.
Wow.
And so...
So if crack didn't destroy our communities, what did?
Let me give you an example. So the highest unemployment rates in this country was about 1982. Those were the highest unemployment rates. And crack didn't hit the market until early 1985. People blame crack for high unemployment rates and all those sorts of things. The unemployment rates during the whole crack era was nowhere near they were in 1982 before they came. People blame crack for grandmothers having to raise a new generation of children because mothers had abandoned their children. That had gone on in poor communities, including my own family, including the Jews, including a number of places, long before crack, but crack was blamed. So crack was blamed for all of these kinds of things that were just simply related to poverty and lack of opportunity, lack of education, all these kinds of things.
Tracy,
I'm here.
I'm listening to this, and I'm trying to make the correlation between someone making a conscious effort to seek out and use crack to them being poor. I know some folks that are pretty rich and use crack who make a pretty good mess of their lives as well. You know, but if you add another factor into the equation. On top of being poor, it's not good. It's not good.
You know, no, that's right.
My wife's a teacher. My wife's a teacher, and, you know, they talked about the reason why the school grades were so bad was because of all the crack babies involved that were coming out. No, that's not the case. The bad parenting has a lot more to do with performance in school than what was going on, you know, with crack babies.
That's right.
It's just making excuses, as far as I'm concerned.
But hold on,
no, you're right.
I got a question. Now, it doesn't. But crack drug use in the late '70s and the early '80s. did not have a lot to do with the foundation of what we see today based upon the lack of responsibility and behavior that came out of that?
Well, I'm sorry. What do you mean, Tracy? I'm just not clear.
Because when you look at crack, the lack of infrastructure, the lack of support, the lack of education, the lack of productivity that came out of the 70s and the 80s that you see the manifestation today.
The 70s, I don't know what you mean, lack of
The late 70s is where drug usage really started coming into, it started crescendoing.
So yeah,
during the disco age, you know, you were doing powder cocaine that evolved into crack cocaine in the early 80s, that you see the manifestation of that there. And so that pipe right there during that time from that cocaine era, and you actually see the fruits of it today.
I got you. So you're right in that the peak of drug use in this country was 1978, 1980. But the thing that you should understand is that the rates of powder cocaine use were always considerably more than the rates of crack cocaine use. Crack cocaine use was considered minuscule compared to what powder cocaine use was. So it certainly was not crack that caused or was the problem here. And when we think about that era in the late 1970s, early 1980s, we think about the people who are running the country now, because Barack Obama graduated high school about that time and a number of people who were running the country. I don't think that we will say that the country is so much worse off. I think they're doing a good a job as their predecessors, as generations before them. And I think that to say that somehow that era is not doing well, there's no evidence to suggest that.
The reason why I'm saying that they're not doing well is because a lot of them are deceased. I mean, I came out of school in the 80s, and, you know, we were wild. And, you know, I got a whole group of friends who are pushing up daisies right now.
Well, so do I, and I came out in high school in 84, and then there was always among our communities, of course. I mean, we look at the life expectancies. For example, black men, they can be expected to live until 69, white men 75, black women 75, white women 80. So that's always been a trend, you know. So, we lose more people, but that's not only in that era. That has happened before and since.
Well, listen, Dr. Carl Hart, your book is named High Price. I'm at the end of my day, and I thank you for coming on. Hope I didn't beat you up.
Thank you. This was entertaining, and you all keep doing your thing and keep pushing us. So keep doing your thing.
And I want you to come back with the answers to the questions that I asked you. I want you to do that. Do you know, because what I asked you was rocket science. I want you to go back and find out why is it that we are not working on our own and we're waiting for the government to come and save us.
Tracy, it was fun. You know, I know who you are now, and I'm going to tell all my friends, so they got to check you out.
Please do. And listen, if we can do anything to help you, please let us know. Hey, you've been listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. Go and check out Dr. Brandy, Dr. Mason, and don't forget to go buy High Price by Dr. Carl Hart. God bless you guys, and have a great afternoon.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates.
Was Jeff born in a castle? I mean, oh, gosh.
Is the doctor still on, or did he leave already?
I think he left. Was Jeff born in a castle because he don't seem
to
know about life and other people and situations? He just has, like, no compassion, no understanding.
What is he talking about?
Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. You know, I get that same comment from people saying that and this is South Carolina, that I'm not compassionate and I'm not this and I'm not that. Okay? So what you gotta understand is this, okay? Now listen to what I'm saying. There is no compassion or what you all call compassion is mistaken. There is no logic in compassion. Okay? What you got to understand, compassion is telling somebody you need to get off your butt and go to work and quit depending on it. Compassion is not, there's a difference between compassion and pity. And you pity someone you try and follow them and take care of them and not make them do the things they need to do to become better.
When you say you lack compassion,
that's not how I perceive compassion at all.
Can I add something?
Turn off all that noise.
I just want to add something to what you just did. We just show you that you have no compassion because the way you talk just now could influence some people, but some other people would basically look at the way you talk would basically be shut down to the way you talk.
Wait a minute. Let's go back to what he said. He just told me he doesn't have compassion. Somebody's got something on
in the background that's making
that's
a
not
lot
me.
Of.
I don't know
confusion.
Who that is.
Is that Eric?
Eric.
That's not what I mean, it's just your perception of compassion. Pity, compassion, of course, two different things. When I say compassion, I'm talking about people do things to their level of intelligence. And until their level of intelligence, meaning their level of reasoning, that's how they do things. Therefore, I'm not going to judge people by how they do things. That's what I say about compassion, because some people are in situations and they really don't know. They really don't have knowledge of health and all this stuff. They really don't have knowledge of finances. They don't have knowledge of certain things, so it's not always their fault. I understand we're adults and we're responsible as adults, but there's some people who really don't know. So I don't always point my finger and say, these people need to do this and I need to do that. First of all, I don't need to be telling nobody what they need to do. I need to fix myself, and I focus on that. But that's just me, and that's just my perception. That's what I'm saying.
But don't you think that those people could get the information? Don't you think that if we would put a gun into their head and we basically say, if you don't get the information, I will kill your kids, they wouldn't go get the information?
But that's on them.
The problem is knowing where. And that's the problem I see is knowing where to get the information.
Wait, let's see. We are the most informed religion. We have the most information. You can find information on anything now. You could go to the bookstore. You could go to the internet. The people who are least likely informed about the things you're talking about
don't have access to internet. They don't have
okay.
a bookstore in their neighborhood.
Do they have access to a library?
But what I'm saying is some people just don't know, and that's not their fault. Some people, they just
I agree.
Don't.
I agree. They don't know. I will never blame somebody who doesn't know. Now that you don't know, I don't know about health. I don't know about finance. Fine. You don't know. What's the next step? How do you find out to get to know? You go to the library and go get a book
that
tells you.
Sorry. Okay, now. I'm Nancy.
I'm right here.
Okay, you said that, was I born in a castle?
Oh, yeah. I was talking about that.
I understand something. Yeah, but she's saying that, and she doesn't know what I think, and I don't know where she's getting that.
Let me answer you first.
I'm not against welfare for people that are in bad shape. I am absolutely for it. I am against what they're doing by destroying the ability to make money in America, because that's what they're doing. You can't be a small business if you're going to have to pay somebody off the rip $15 an hour.
But that's for welfare, though.
No, it's not the point. I'm for welfare. People need help. There are people, especially our people, and we're not even the most people that are on it. Okay?
So don't
accept that to me. But the problem with this is it has kept our community in bondage to the government. And we don't see any other way out but to go that way. And that's the problem. Okay, now, she said there's a lot of people that got off of welfare. I know some people that got off of it, but I know too many of them that never did.
I know two generations that got off.
They got off in New York City.
No, this is Diva. I'm talking about Youngstown, the inner city of Youngstown.
You don't know those two generations of people that got off. You just don't have them because you don't even have the employment here to
do it. I do know two whole generations that get off. Just about all of my aunts, including my mother, was on it. By the time we became by the time welfare reform came along, we were able to move. Not only my generation, but my mother's generation was able to move from welfare to work. Now the kids that we are having, the kids that my cousins are having, never even got on welfare, never even had to experience social welfare programs. Why? Because they had the opportunity to get jobs.
Well, for the record, I'm not against it. And so let that be known. I think that what they're doing now is they have you in bondage to it so that they keep you voting for the people that agree. And that's
What about the people who aren't on welfare, never been a part of social welfare programs, and they still vote Democrat?
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry. Say that once again.
What about the people who aren't on welfare, who didn't grow up on welfare, and they still vote Democrat?
That's why they still do it, because they think that these people aren't taking advantage of them when they merchandise. Because they're not doing it. Look at your predominantly. Are we still there?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Look at your predominantly black neighborhoods in every city in America. They all look the same. Why? It's not because we're terrible people or stupid people. It's because we don't have access to capital. We don't have political power to call in free enterprise zones in our community. We don't have them starting businesses in our community. And they don't have very good education in our community on purpose. So my point is, no, I understand that the program helps somebody not die, but they don't really help you live.
I would have to dispute you on that, because I don't know where we would have been, because I've seen where my mom worked and was not allowed to collect welfare benefits, and how horrible, how we didn't hardly have food, how we were a threat in getting our utilities shut off. And then she would get laid off, and then she would go back on a system. We had food, had enough money to pay the bills. Now, the only reason why she didn't stay on the system, because she didn't want the handout. She wanted to work. So this notion, and I know plenty of people, lots of females, single females having kids who were on the system, and all they wanted to do was work. But there was not the opportunity. It came down to, do I work or do I get the benefits and risk the stigma? Since welfare reform,
they can't work because they don't have any skills. They hardly graduated from school. I said any of them hardly graduated from school. I'm not saying that they weren't smart enough to. I'm saying that they weren't there enough to do it.
What does them graduate from high school? High school have anything? You have millionaires who have never graduated from high school.
Yeah, this is true, but you have people that get up and go to work and do something different. These people don't really know that there's something else to do.
That's what I'm saying. That's where you're wrong. I've seen females in my generation who are now changing their lives. Now they are. I remember during the Clinton administration, there was so much money coming into the hood. They're going to trade school, getting educated for trade school, going to college. Bush came in, cut and got them products, them programs. It tapered off. Now that Obama's in, I see so many girls who would maybe have worked at a Family Dollar, maybe have worked at a fast food restaurant. Now they're looking, I'm going to school. I want to become a nurse. Taking baby steps. Even if they start off as an STN, taking baby steps to get higher and higher, but you guys don't see that because you're living in what, that's why I say you're living in a bubble. You're living in your suburban district.
Here you go with this. We work with these people every single damn day.
Don't start this bubble. Like they're really telling you,
I see the programs. I know the people that run them, and I know the people that sit there and put those programs together for the county. And guess what? It has more to do with the state than it does the federal government. because the state is what is who delivers that money to the communities from the
right.
federal government.
And when Clinton put extra money in the budget,
again,
and
you didn't see no
money
flow.
To the state. The
you
states were
no
able
flow.
To,
you
the states
have
more
to
money
state.
To get those to put into
well.
Those programs for the people. Don't sit here and tell me that the state didn't know. When Clinton was in office, we had
the
more federal dollars coming
money.
Into the state of Ohio. That trickled down to local communities. When Bush got in office, they cut a lot of that spending for those programs.
The state runs
so
the welfare,
trickled down
the welfare
to
the local state runs the welfare money that comes into the state also, Diva. I'm sorry to tell you. They do. And that's why when Mr. Kasich expanded Medicare, people was pissed.
Medicaid. Medicaid are not the same thing. Medicare is a federal program. Medicaid is a state program. Can we please get it right?
It comes from the federal government money that gets sent to that state once again. The states divide up all monies that go to communities from the federal government. Sorry
exactly.
to tell you that. Except
exactly.
a direct grant.
Exactly.
Except a direct
that's why under
grant.
Clinton, we had more money going into the social welfare programs in the state of Ohio than under Bush.
And why do you think
under
that
Bush,
is?
Under Bush, we've had mothers who had to worry about going to work because he gutted the funds for child care.
Instead of running your mouth, why do you think there was more money in those programs then?
What do you mean, under Clinton?
Yeah.
Oh, let me check. Didn't Clinton raise taxes?
Huh?
Didn't Clinton raise taxes?
It's not about raising taxes. It's about that he had the money to do
he
it.
He had
with.
To pay.
The cuts, they forced him to balance the budget, and he had the dot-coms doing all the business that they were doing, and they did well.
Okay, but the fact of the matter is you still cannot deny the fact that under Clinton we have more money coming into those social service programs.
My point is it had nothing to do
under
with
Bush,
Clinton.
He didn't.
No, it didn't have to do with him, and he'll tell you that. The thing is you just had more money, you were more flush with cash because you had money to pay your bills.
Are you saying that Bush didn't cut those programs? Are you really trying to sit here and tell me that Bush did not cut spending when it came to social programs?
I don't know whether Bush cut those programs or not. Clinton cut them.
Well, you need
them.
Research because he did
Clinton
cut those
the programs.
No.
Listen. Clinton cut the programs himself, and you didn't see it till after he was out of office because he did the welfare reform.
There was nothing wrong with welfare reform. That's what y'all failed to realize. I don't know what the good doctor was talking about, but everyone in the hood, at least the people who were on it, were excited about welfare reform. You mean to tell me I can go to work, but I don't have to lose my food stamps and my Medicaid?
Oh, boy.
Oh, forget the cash. That's not doing anything for my family, really. I maybe needed the medical card, or maybe I needed the child care. Now, under Clinton, he allowed you to have options, where before you had to take all or nothing. So nobody was complaining. That's why his popularity didn't go down. Newt Gingrich came out and said himself, if he knew that welfare reform was going to make Clinton as popular as he did, they would have never pushed for it.
Oh, boy, that's not true. Not at all.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. See, this is the difference between me and you, Jeff. I don't know. You weren't living in Youngstown, Ohio, the inner city, during the Clinton and Bush administrations, nor the Obama administration. You can talk about what you think you know. I don't know because you weren't in it.
Diva, here's the problem. It has nothing to do with being in Youngstown. It has nothing to do with being in South Carolina. It has everything to do with being in the state that you were in and receiving the benefit. So it doesn't make any difference. Of course, there are some dynamics
that are
different about
being... Oh,
we're
talking about Youngstown, Ohio.
But what I'm saying is the face of welfare reform was different in different places, okay? If you've got a bunch of people crowded in a neighborhood, what you see there might not be the same thing as what I'm seeing here. Here in South Carolina, you know, I knew people who were not happy with the welfare reform because it meant they had to go out and get a job. Trust me on this. They liked being at home and sitting at home and doing what they wanted to do and still collecting their checks. They only went off welfare because the system said they had to. And now they're giving them the option of doing it now. Listen, you said something very important.
South Carolina.
The work requirement has been dropped. You don't have to work anymore. to receive
you
benefits.
You said something very important in South Carolina, and that's not true. The work requirement has not been dropped. It's been left up to the states on how they're going to implement. It's been left up to the states on how they're going to implement that requirement.
Eva,
but you said something very important in South Carolina.
I don't care how you dress the pig up, it's still going to be a pig.
South Carolina, you said that there were people who wanted to stay on the system, but they couldn't because the government forced them off the system. Now, how does that correlate with Republicans telling me that the system is now creating this generational poverty where people can now just be dependent upon the system? If you're being kicked out of the system, how are you going to be?
One thing I'll say is, quit thinking it's Republicans that are telling you this.
I only hear it from Republicans.
If you hear it from your own conservative Democrats, go stop the bull. And that's what
I do not hear it from Democrats that I have conversations with. I only hear it from Republicans.
That's right. You can't hear it from nobody that's on your side. That's true. I understand.
You're not getting what I'm saying. I'm saying the people that I engage in conversations with are the only ones who say stuff like that is Republicans. Now, conservative Democrats, like the woman in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that tends to call in, she may be of a different mindset, but I don't engage her on a daily basis. I mainly hear it from Jeff, Tracy, South Carolina, and the likes of you guys, that the system makes you dependent. These programs make you dependent. Well, how can they make you dependent when they're kicking you off of it?
Once again, I'll say it like this. It's not just Republicans. I'm telling you, as a black man, I'm watching the decimation of black community over the 50-plus years I've been alive. And
nobody hear you over all that.
And having my family members on that system, okay, I see what it did to them. I see my cousins struggling right now, and don't have a part of a window because of all that was just given to them over a certain time. And that they never learned how to fend for themselves until after their mother died. And that's the bottom line. Here's the thing. You can't have the system without education. Otherwise, you have just created a group of people that say, vote one way. And they vote for their own decimation and their own annihilation. Because these people have in their party platform the annihilation of black people.
I'm trying to figure out, why do you guys just have these type of conversations about black people and those who vote Democrat? Because I can take this city here outside, not even a city, it's a township, that is very rural but very poor. And they have the same and I see the same problems within that township that I saw in Youngstown.
They got drive-bys?
White crime is totally different than black crime.
They ain't got drive-bys.
They have a problem with drugs. They have a problem with meth. They have a very bad methamphetamine addiction problem in that community. They have poor schools. They have They have young women who are getting pregnant, single moms. So, and it's a very red district. Very red district.
You have addiction problems in every community, Asian, white, it doesn't matter.
Okay,
my point is this.
They have drive-bys, but they have their rates of crime. They have own crime. They have crime. White crime is different than black crime.
Crime is everywhere.
Okay, so the fact of the matter is, what I'm trying to point out is, that district is a very conservative district, but they're facing the same problems that Youngstown faces.
Well, once again, when you talk about the stuff that was in Youngstown and all that stuff, I don't know what you were seeing, what you thought you were experiencing under Clinton that didn't happen under Bush. But as it happened under Bush, there's two reasons for it. First of all, it had
just stop making excuses.
Can I finish it?
No, because now you're just making excuses. No, because now you're just making excuses. And you're trying to fulfill somebody's experience.
No, I'm not trying to do anything.
Yeah, you are. You're trying to make it sound, well, I don't. You're making it seem like I don't know what I'm talking about when I live through.
You don't know what you were talking about, but that's okay. It's okay to not know what you're talking about.
Whatever, Jeff. I swear, man. Man, you are a funny cat, for real. For real. But you sit up here you think you know so much that you didn't hear me belittle South Carolina's experience. I didn't say, no, South Carolina, that's not what you experienced. That's not true. Because what he experienced is what he experienced. What he saw is what he saw. And now you're sitting up here trying to make some, no, you didn't really see it, Diva. You don't know what you're talking about. That's bull crap.
Well, Amente, are you still there? Diva, you ran Amente off.
No, I didn't. You ran Amente off.
No. I didn't run off. Y'all talking. I still say, Diva, I'll give you another 5 years, and you will be over to the conservative side. Because the thing that I have found, the thing that I have found with age, experience, and wisdom, it causes a change in the mindset. You know, and the more you talk, and the more you see, and the more you experience, you start talking more and more like a conservative. You don't realize it, but me and Jeff do.
Yeah, right. I will never be a conservative.
The older, the saying is, if you're under 30, if you're under 30 and you are a liberal or conservative, you're heartless. If you're over 30 and you're not a conservative, you're crazy.
I'm sorry. I can never see myself as a conservative. The agendas are too different. The ideals are just too different. There are some things that I agree with the conservatives, and I'm not talking about Tea Party Republicans. There are some things that I agree with them. There are some things I agree with when it comes to libertarianism. But I will never be a conservative for the simple fact your whole ideal and your agenda is just too far from removed of who I am at my core. Like the good doctor says, if you live in America, we have a responsibility to those who are least among us. I don't care if I was a billionaire, I would still feel the same way.
No. That's where the doctor's wrong. That's where he's wrong. The doing things for the least among us has everything to do with the Christian ideology, not the American Constitution. Okay.
I don't.
The American Constitution has nothing to do with. No, Diva, the doctor has got it wrong when he says dealing with the least among us is a part of our American fabric as under our Constitution. No, it's a part of our American fabric based on our Christian beliefs. Okay.
He never
mentioned
the
Christian beliefs.
He never mentioned the Constitution.
And that's where his theory is flawed.
He never mentioned the Constitution.
You cannot separate what America does for its poor people based on the Constitution. You base that on its beliefs, its religious beliefs, Stephen.
South Carolina. He didn't mention the Constitution. He just simply said, we as America, we have a responsibility for those who are the least among us.
No, but what I'm saying is when he says we as Americans have to do that, no, we do not have to do that. That is not a part of what we have in our fabric as American citizens.
Either.
It is a part of our Judeo-Christian tradition. And our Judeo-Christian beliefs.
You say
it has nothing to do with the government.
That is your ideology. That is your belief. That is why I will never be a conservative.
Listen to what I'm saying. We have a responsibility to all Americans under the Constitution. That is not a part of our Constitution. Now that is definitely a part of the socialist ideology
in South Carolina? Nobody's talking about the Constitution.
Because that's what Marxism says. Marxism says to each according to his ability, to each according to his to his need. Okay, that is a Marxist ideology.
I don't think it, the
okay?
doctor nor
but when you
I
say
American, said we
ascribe
to Marxist
that,
beliefs. So why do you keep bringing in the Constitution? He's not talking about under the Constitution we have this we have to do something. He says that's something that he believes. As most liberal-minded people, we believe that they're in
that
collectivism.
Not,
you guys believe in that, and conservatives tend to believe in individualism.
You believe that's socialist, Diva. I don't care. You can call it collectivism.
Okay,
or whatever it is.
You know what?
It's
you call me
ideology.
Whatever you want. You call me. You can say whatever you want. That's fine. I don't care. The fact of the matter is, I will never be a conservative.
Ideology.
I will never be a.
Well, fine,
I'm
fine,
telling you,
fine.
I would never
then
be a conservative.
Then I'll start calling you a communist. Then.
That's okay. You can call me that. I'll just call you a sellout.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it is not the government's responsibility to take care of people. That's
the fact that you're right,
it
should not be the government's responsibility to take care of people. It should be us. But the fact of the matter is, we live in a society of individualism is taking over. And the fact is, there is not enough. People don't feel they have enough resources to do what is needed to help someone, to give someone a helping hand. Therefore, I feel the government needs to step in because they have the resources to do it.
The government does not need to step in because our Constitution pretty much forbids it.
I'm not going to sit up there as an employee who has worked for someone and see how cruel and how unfair and unjust employers can be. All my faith in someone who employs people to say, okay, they'll get it right on their own. I'm sorry. I just can't.
Well, here's the thing. You know, the Constitution or our governmental structure does not anywhere in it state that the government has to take care of and the government
no,
will take
shut,
care
Sherlock.
Of people.
No, Sherlock. You're not going to get an argument from me on that.
Okay. Now,
but
what you're saying is, the government should. No. You cannot bring moral issues into it without discussing a base for those moral issues. You've got to have a base. So what's the base? Is it Christianity? Is it the Islamic faith? Is it Judaism? Is it Taoism? Is it Buddhism? You've got to have a base for it. Morality has got to have a base.
Nobody realizes that the colonies were all founded by churches. That's when I hear this, we're not a Christian nation BS being thrown about. We most certainly were a Christian nation up to about 50, 60 years ago. And when we threw God out of this nation. But the colonies, the different churches started and ran the colonies. These were not run by atheists or anything like that. In fact, atheists were actually forbidden not to take office in some of the colonies. Because
why do you think Thomas Jefferson is so hard for there to be a separation between church and state? Because he's seen firsthand how the Church of England destroyed their political system, and the Church of England, everything. There was a lot of corruption. The same thing in the colony. You can't sit here and tell me because
Christian churches,
that they were doing good. They were not.
The churches founded the colonies, Diva. Look it up. Don't take my word for it.
After
the country was formed, the first act that they did was have a prayer meeting in the little stone church at the bottom of those twin tower buildings that was there
up to
9/11.
U.S. Constitution that is based on biblical beliefs.
Every single part of it was. That's my point. Every part was based on
Christians having a moral belief that that Constitution, because if that was the case, everyone wouldn't be treated fair and equal.
You wouldn't have a freedom of religion. This evil attempt right here is why I say the things I say to you, and I'm wrong for saying I'm absolutely incorrect.
And that's
okay?
why I say you're a Pharisee. Every time I talk to you about religion and
you can say whatever. You just don't know what the hell you're talking about. That's all it is. I do know what I'm talking about. I know history. You think you know, and that's your point. But you need to pull it up for yourself.
Instead of sitting and listening and taking in the information that somebody's telling you, your first thing is to get your walls up, shut it down, shut it out, and not even have a semblance of having a discussion. You don't want to have a discussion. You want to have a debate on everything. We have you saying everything that comes into your mind to say, and you don't have the faintest idea how to back it up because you don't have nothing to back it up with.
It's not true.
Just because I don't throw facts off the top of my head, you don't back your stuff up either.
That's exactly what you do. Doesn't mean I don't know what I'm talking about.
Because you can easily go and verify what I'm talking about your darn self. Why do I, with the knowledge and the wealth of with the internet, it's accessible, why don't you just go look it up instead of shooting it down? I don't know how many times I've been shot down or something, and then I turn around and come back and say, oh, well, this is what I was talking about. Oh, okay, then you got your tail tucked between your legs. So to say that this country was founded by churches, I'm not disputing that. I'm not denying that. There was a problem in England with the Church of England and how it controlled the people. There's a reason why the British government wanting to sell the colonies, that people are willing to travel, make that difficult journey to come here. The Puritan movement was very real. Plymouth Rock selling of those Puritans, very real. I'm not denying that. But what I am saying is when I look at the Constitution, when I look at the Ten Commandments, when I look at how our laws are, they do not line up with the Bible per se. Israel is guided by their Torah. Everything from their political laws, their economic structure is guided by the Torah. We do not have a document that is based on biblical foundation. All we have is a document that was brought together by men of a moral faith who wanted to start a country, move away from the oppressive regime of the British government, and go from there to building a what we're supposed to have is a democracy where people have the things that they didn't have in Britain.
She's not going to get sick of hearing herself talk because she just talked about a moral faith.
Because you just have all that background noise.
It was built on a moral faith. Now, where the hell did you get a moral faith from? Huh?
A lot of the founding fathers
You talked yourself into a corner. Now, where did you get a moral faith from that we were founded on, if that's what the document was founded on?
I didn't say we were founded on. I said that men of the moral faith came together to create a document. That's what I said.
You said it was not founded on the Bible. It was founded on our Constitution. It was formed on a moral faith.
No, I did not. I said our Constitution was created by men of a moral faith. I didn't say it was founded or based on one.
I said it was created by men of a moral faith. That's what I said. We had this discussion. We had this discussion when Jeff wasn't on. And I told you that morality, to have a moral faith, you have to have a base for that morality to be developed in.
Look at the United States Constitution. It is not a document that lines up with the laws of Moses, nor is it a document that lines up with the Ten Commandments.
What?
Because they contradict each other. Because a man now will not go to jail for committing adultery.
The Ten Commandments?
Then I get killed for committing adultery. You will not go to jail for lying.
What are you talking about?
I can sit here and tell you a lie.
Diva,
I can sit here and tell you a lie. There's no punishment for me to lie. under the Constitution. But under the laws of Moses, there was a penalty to pay.
There was a penalty for
That's
what?
All I'm saying.
A penalty for
Israel.
What?
Their whole, their whole political system is based off the Torah. There is no freedom of religion in Israel.
Ziva,
the dominant religion is Judaism.
Ziva, nobody's telling you that there was a word-for-word basis of the Constitution on, you know, in doing that. Okay, nobody's telling you that. But the basic document was absolutely, and you can get the founding fathers' words for themselves and see that they founded everything off of the belief of the Bible, Christian belief.
I'm not saying that they're not, but what I'm not saying that they didn't, but what I'm saying is they're not a nation, whereas our government is solely operating in Christianity. There is no room for any other religion. We're not a Muslim nation based off of the Quran. We are not a nation like Israel based off the Torah. We are a nation that is by principle based off of democracy, whereas we are free to commit our own sins. We are free whether or not we want to go to church or not. We are free whether we even want to accept Christ. You tell me what room is that for there under Islam or under Jews living in Israel?
That was you guys arguing
I mean, now
the other day when I said that same thing.
Previously, they were not able to. So when you hear the left talking about this country is not based off of Christianity, that's what they're looking at. They're looking at how Israel operates under the Torah and how Islam operates under, how Arab nations operate under the Quran. You don't see that chokehold on America or Great Britain like you see in the Middle East. Yeah, like in the Middle East when it comes to your religion.
Because, Diva, because here's a rub. You know, because that is in Christianity, it is in Christianity that a man be free, that a man have a choice. Okay? That's a biblical principle.
Not
That's
necessarily.
That's why God gave us free will. That is why God gave us free will.
Exactly. So if God gave us free will, yet according to you guys, we get punished and judged for every time we operate outside of that free will. Is that really truly free will?
I don't know. Wait a minute. You said something that is not true again. According to who, God?
Okay, but just hold on. So if America is operating under a document that says and if gays want to be accepted into society and we accept homosexuality in society, all I hear from the Christian right is America is being damned to hell because we have all these homosexuals who are
fully
operating
in society. That's not why. Not at all. You're there because you've legalized it. You're there because you legalized the killing of children. You've legalized the killing of children and said it was right. That's what you're under judgment for.
Okay, now, abortion, I'm not going to argue with you on. Abortion, yes, because we legalized the murder of babies. But to say that we need to shut homosexuality down?
Well, you do need to shut it down. You sure do. You sure do.
But
because
that's not free will, though.
Because you know, because that's the first commandment, and God is just more pissed at that. You know, those two things are the first commandment: be fruitful and multiply. Fruits can't multiply like that, okay? Those fruits, you know what I'm saying? So, how do you think God is pleased when He tells us be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, and you're killing kids, the 1.2 million of them a year? And then you're legalizing the act of homosexuality that produces nothing. What did he do to the fig tree that did not produce? He cursed it to die. Think you think he's going to do that now? No, he will. And it will not be the Christians doing it. It will be God doing it.
We're not operating in free will because believers are not allowed to operate in free will, it seems. It seems non-believers are not free to operate in free will.
negligence of the law is doesn't make you not guilty.
No, because
if you don't know that you're going to fall off the building, you
believers
get
set in a squeal, we get punished. Even believers get punished along with them. How is that free will?
No, the believers don't get punished. That's the whole thing. Believers don't. They always escape. If you look at anything in the Bible, the believers always escape.
This I know, but I'm just saying. I'm like, this is all that all I hear from the right. From the right is condemnation.
You don't know what fundamentals are.
And he's judging us on the hell because of homosexuals choosing not.
There's a Christian right and there's a political right. And so you have to differentiate the two. And once again, you can't do it if you don't have the facts to support what you're saying. I understand what you're deriving from people, but you're so quick to think that somebody is doing something because they belong to a party than what it really is. I could give a damn about the party. You have to understand that. I'm doing things because of what's right. That's why I make the decision.
You care less about the party. Every conversation
what?
Is generic. You wouldn't make it so much about. You wouldn't make it so much about the Republican Party.
No, that's what you and Jeff King do to me, and then I answer you back.
No,
and tell
no, no,
you
no, Jeff.
Party.
We could be talking about. We could be talking and agreeing on poverty within the black community. You college.
The state of the black people in America is directly proportional to the control that the Democrat Party has over them. So if
and
they're screwed up, which they are, it's directly
people,
because of the Democrat Party.
And the state
directly.
Of poor white people is what?
Huh?
And the state of poor white people who are impoverished are Republican. Who's playing for that?
Well, guess what? The Republicans told you screw you after you were so stupid to start voting Democrat and putting yourselves after they tried to help you be independent.
Who's to blame for white poverty? When they vote Republican, who's to blame for those people who are impoverished?
That's a lie.
And there are no poor white Republicans.
Call us a lie.
There's no poor white people who vote Republican.
There's poor black people that vote Republican.
Okay, so who's to blame for them?
Who's to blame? They are. They're to blame themselves.
Oh, so it's not the Republican
Party. Being a Republican doesn't automatically make you the most intelligent person in the world.
You have four Republicans, but it's the Democrats' fault, Democratic Party's fault that you have poor people that support that party.
Well, what you've got, Diva, is a system that continually keeps you in poverty, a system that continually keeps you oppressed, essentially. A system that will not allow you to go past where you're at, and you support
okay,
it continually.
Again, you guys want to blame.
There is no way. There's no way that a black man in the black community, with everything that Al Sharpton and all those guys have been touting about education and economic development and all the rest of this stuff, and all the money that's been thrown into the black community, we should be thriving.
Okay, again, you guys correlate black poverty with Democrats. I ask you to correlate poverty, white poverty, with Republicans. Poverty amongst those
here's
who vote Democrat. You blame it on the Democrat Party.
Diva.
But poverty
what
amongst
don't
those
realize,
who Republicans, you don't
Diva,
want to see the Republican Party
white,
for.
White people vote Democrat too.
But that's not the point.
Isn't
you guys, all, when you talk, when we talk about poverty, you always want to blame poverty
no,
on the
talking,
Democrat Party. But you never
yes,
look
I,
at
yeah.
the poverty that is among Republican voters. Why?
We do.
No, you don't.
Do.
I've never heard y'all
yes,
talk about poor whites, poor people who still vote Republican. Why? Y'all never talk about that. Y'all never talk about. So what's going on with them that they continuously vote Republican, but yet they're still impoverished?
Because
they
vote their heart. They vote their
heart. What's the problem there that you have poverty amongst Republican voters? What's the problem? Why are they poor?
Well, what I've seen, they accept the fact that they're poor, and they don't accept anything from the government. And they don't blame the government.
You really think that these people are not accepting
anything from the government? Here's the thing, Diva. You see, a white person that's poor, I believe they accept that they're poor and deal with it. A black person that's poor is told that it's not their fault and it's the white man's fault and it's all racist.
I'll give you this one tidbit. Now, in white poverty, in a white impoverished area, I don't see Section 8. In, or a government housing.
That is my business. I see it all.
Okay,
the time.
But I'm saying in the red district, I don't see
what
that as at least where I live. I don't see that as much.
Well, trust me.
I do see them collecting food stamps. I do see them collecting welfare. Food stamps and medical. That's why they have a welfare jobs and family center right in their community. So somebody's
collecting. You need to take a look at Atlanta. Take a look at Atlanta. Take a look at Boston. Take a look at some of these northeastern cities, and you will see it.
Rural conservative districts. I'm not talking about very blue districts. I'm talking about rural conservative districts where you have poverty. They are accepting government handouts. They're on welfare.
Yeah.
They're receiving some type of welfare assistance.
Yeah.
So the difference between poor Republicans and poor Democrats is that poor Republicans already accepted the fact that they're poor and they're not trying about it.
No, they're trying to get out of it. There you
go. What do you mean? What's the difference between them trying to get out of it? How do you see that they're trying to get out of it? Because they vote Republican?
Who else are they going to blame? Besides himself.
Hey, hold on. Let me make sure I got this right, South Carolina, because this is very interesting. So are you saying that poor Republicans, because they vote Republican, that means they're trying to get out of their...
What happened?
Is that what you're saying?
No, I lost you.
Okay.
I didn't hear that last part.
Are you saying that poor Republicans are trying to get out of their poverty because they vote Republican?
No, because of their belief.
What is their belief if they're still collecting welfare?
Well, the thing about it is that collecting welfare is not a sin. You see what I'm saying?
So are you saying that poor Republicans.
They accept the fact that they're poor. They accept the fact that the situation they're in, and they understand it. They do not blame anybody else for it. The black people is a situation where we have a built-in crutch between, you know, we're going to be the white, the black.
So as long as poor Democrats just accept the fact that they're the reason they're poor, then you would be okay with that. You'd be okay with Democrats voting, especially poor blacks voting en masse for Democrats.
Here you go.
Is that a yes?
And a dollar piece. No, here's the thing.
Y'all excusing me.
What they're doing, hang on 1 second.
That's interesting.
What I am saying is this. They're what they're doing is when you're poor and black and you're on welfare, they're telling you the reason you're there is because you're deprived you're black and the system is against you. Okay? That's something I've heard basically all my life. Okay? When you're poor and you're white, what's up, Doug? When you're poor and you're white, you're poor and you have to deal with it. Okay? Because there's nothing else that they can say.
Well, because you do understand there's a white people have never held back the country. The opportunity is provided. They've been able. You can't deny that white people have opportunities that non-white people don't have. You can't deny that. I'm not saying that's everywhere and it's all the time, but it's just not that long ago where blacks couldn't sit at the front of the bus. They had to sit on the back of the bus. You lived during that time. Jeff lived during that time. There was a time where my grandmother was subjected to, in Alabama, white only this, black only this. That's not that long ago. So how are you thinking that things have changed so dramatically to where, now since the 60s, people's hearts and their attitudes towards non-whites have changed to where they're just so accepting of us? Guess everybody left off. Okay.